Hi, everybody. It's episode 499 of PodQuest.
Hey!
It is Wednesday, March 6th, 2024. Next week is episode 500. I got Druten here.
Hello.
And there's a walnut.
Yeah, there is. There is for now.
How you guys doing?
Oh, better than last week.
That's good. Were you sick last week or just not feeling?
Yeah, no, by Wednesday, even if I didn't wind up having something else I had to go do, I couldn't talk.
Like, oh, that sucks.
My voice was dead on Wednesday last week.
That was Erica 2 weeks ago, I guess it was. Like, just the whole, and she tested a couple times, never tested positive for COVID, but just had like one of those really bad head colds that had her waking up every day with like no voice.
Yeah. And say, well, I didn't even bother testing for COVID because I had no COVID symptoms other than a runny nose. Like, everything was fine, but it was just, I had such a hacky cough that it ruined my vocal cords.
Yeah, that's where she was too. And like, she was so congested from all the nose blowing and like doing like a couple COVID tests, she ended up just tons of nosebleeds. Yeah. It was like, anytime she blew her nose too hard, she got a nosebleed. It was like living in an anime.
Gotta tell her to stop looking at all those sexy ladies.
I did make a joke that she is now the most more like Sanji than any other character in One Piece. Who is the big pervert character for anyone not familiar?
Yeah.
Almost offensively so.
Well, I mean, that's what happens when you have a 20-year-old anime that's still going. A character has to develop to not be pervert.
Yeah, but I mean, like, he still is.
Which is a shock.
Like,
it is anime. It is Japan, so it's a little bit different over there.
True. Like, we're about 10 years in, I want to say. We're in the 500s, so figure around a decade in, and literally where they're at right now, his arc is he hasn't seen any women in 2 years because he was on an island with nothing but men who dressed like women. That he kept getting so many nosebleeds upon coming back to like the regular world that he almost died from blood loss.
Oh, anime,
right?
Yeah, like, come on. That was the plot point you guys went for?
Yep.
But yeah, it's Wednesday. We're here. One more episode to 500, which is a lot of fucking episodes.
Yeah, it really is.
That's too many. That's it. This is the last episode.
Oh, you know what? We should actually, we'll do this off air, but I'm going to say it now because I'm going to forget otherwise. We should figure out if we want to record like a evergreen episode or something because I will be away the second week of April.
Okay.
All right. We should figure that out.
Yeah. Should have said something sooner. I apologize.
That's fine. It happens.
Yeah, had it even dawned on me till right now.
I mean, but it's the second week of April. We're only in the first week of March, so you're good.
Yeah, I mean, that's true.
We've got plenty of time.
I have known since January that we were going away, though, so I could have said something sooner.
Yeah.
So, that's on me. Anyway, before we get into, like, agenda stuff, did you guys see the news? Well, I mean, I know I told you both the news, but Did it register for either of you?
I don't care.
Same.
Like, I'm not trying to be like a jerk. Like, it sucks for the people who lost their job.
Agreed.
What Bob is referencing is Rooster Teeth had to close its doors today. Sucks for all the people that lost their jobs. But the last time I watched Rooster Teeth was when I started watching Ruby with somebody that I was sort of dating just before the pandemic, just before the pandemic. And then I haven't watched it since. And before then, it was Red vs. Blue when it first aired. Rooster Teeth has not been a big mainstay in my household, so it doesn't affect me.
I've literally never watched anything Rooster Teeth.
You've
ever.
Never seen an episode of Red vs. Blue?
Nope.
I'll have to take your word for it, but I have a hard time believing that because we used to watch a lot of that when it first was coming out, and we watched it, and we would rewatch them as like whenever we would hang out to introduce it to somebody new. You may not necessarily remember, but like I feel like we might have showed it to you at some point or another.
I mean, maybe.
Yeah, that would be a wild thing for how much everyone watched it back in like 2002 to say 2004.
But also remember, I actively fucking hated Halo. So, like...
But the thing is, it made fun of Halo.
Sure.
That was a lot of its point. Was it just because they were using Halo, it wasn't Halo. It was they were making fun of Halo, and they were just being... It was the first Let's Play, but it wasn't even a Let's Play, because it was just... It was a comedy sketch.
It was Machinima.
Sketch. Yeah. So, like, I have a feeling we at least showed it to you, whether you liked it or not.
Yeah.
But, like, you've probably seen it. You just didn't care.
Yeah. But, so, I didn't bring it up so much because of whether or not we watched the content. Because, I haven't watched anything on Rooster Teeth since Red versus Blue and, like, the Halo 2 era at the latest. I tried to watch an episode of Ruby, and I really didn't like the animation. And never actually watched a full episode. I just think it's crazy that just out of the blue they announced it, and their reasoning was a change to the digital landscape, where I'm pretty sure Rooster Teeth had like its own subscription service that seemed like it had quite a few subscribers.
I mean, it's who knows? Maybe I don't. Who knows? I legitimately did not realize Rooster Teeth was still a thing until I watched Ruby a few years ago, and then I completely forgot about it again. Like, it's one of those internet sensations that come and go, and so it happens, unfortunately, and maybe they can find a way to come back. Maybe they can pull a Dropout. And
was like, Dropout owned by somebody else?
Dropout was... formerly College Humor, which was owned by somebody, and they shut down College Humor, which then and laid everyone off, which then Sam Reich bought College Humor, and still, like, College Dropout was always College Humor's own thing, but then Sam Reich, like, bought out College Humor / Dropout from whoever owned it after they shut it down, and now it is a huge, very successful, or fairly successful, media platform in and of itself. So, and like they even have like they owned like College Humor itself, and Dropout owned like Dorkly and things like that as well. That like they were owned by somebody, I don't know who. And then now they're basically self-owned by Sam Reich, who is also constantly filming stuff for his own platform.
Okay. But yeah, like I guess with the Rooster Teeth thing, I just more thought it was just crazy that, like, WB is still just out there making, like, wild calls for, like, just canceling things. Like, did you guys see they also, they pulled another one of those, we're going to make a whole movie and then cancel it after it's done for the huge tax credit?
I did not, but yeah.
Yeah, so they did that with Batgirl, last year, the year before. They just did it again with the Roadrunner versus Acme movie, which, like, totally done movie. The Tom and Jerry movie actually did fairly well for them, and they canceled it. Like, they're never going to release it, and they're just going to get a huge tax break from the government for doing that. It's almost like they don't know what the fuck they're doing ever since they merged with Discovery.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will say, it is a bummer for people that did watch Rooster Teeth, because I know they still put out a ton of, like, web content, like... A lot of, they broke into, like, a bunch of, like, smaller channels, and I don't know how many of those smaller channels were, like, still associated with them or not, but I know, like, they basically had a bunch of, like, subsidiaries under them that did, like, different types of content depending on, like, their audiences, and so, like, if they were still all under them, like, I wonder, like, what those groups do now. Like, do they all, is it going to be one of those, we now suddenly have 15 new, like, gaming-related Patreon spin up overnight?
I'm gonna be honest, I didn't really hear what you said, because I was reading something about Rooster Teeth, because you had called out that it's Warner Bros. That closed them, but from what I'm seeing, Warner Bros. Is continuing to invest. It's Rooster Teeth themselves that decide to shut the doors because they're just not making money.
Really? Because the two articles I saw specifically call out Warner Brothers Discovery for shutting down.
So I'm not sure where this person got the information from, but they have a screenshot that says, since inheriting ownership and control of Rooster Teeth from AT&T following its acquisition of Time Warner, Warner Bros. Discovery continued its investment in our company, content, and community. Now, however, it's with a heavy heart I announce that Rooster Teeth is shutting down due to challenges facing digital media resulting from fundamental shifts in consumer behavior, monetization across platforms, advertising, and patronage.
And who is that?
Oh, so I somebody I follow on Twitter posted it, and somebody was like, here's context as to why he's saying sorry to hear about Rooster Teeth. But the person, I don't know who this person is, so I can't source this. But I haven't done a lot of research. It's just the one thing I'm seeing where it's like, somebody said, like, oh, Time Warner, they were still investing in us. We just can't make any money. I mean, I don't know what your articles are saying. If I don't know if you shared any articles on it, but I don't.
So Levin is the current, well, was the current manager for Rooster Teeth, but he's from the WB side of things. But yeah, Variety, Hollywood Reporter, and Deadline were all reporting it as this was done by Warner Brothers. Well, Warner Discovery.
Yeah, and I mean, like, I can see where reading that quote makes it sort of sound like Rooster Teeth was the one to make the decision, but it's really, yeah, Time Warner was giving us money, we're not making any, so they're closing us.
But, I mean, you kind of, like, it's kind of a six and one half dozen the other at this point. If they're not making money, and Warner was not making money from giving them money, then why is Warner going to continue to give them money? If
exactly.
You can't blame Warner for this if they weren't making money.
Well, no. What I'm saying is Warner just continues to make bad business decisions. Like, they purchased them, dumped money into them, didn't see anything come back from it. Like, they should have just stopped. They should have never bought them to begin with, because that's what they keep doing. Like, mm-hmm. Warner just keeps buying more and more channels and platforms and content, and they don't know what to do with it. And in a lot of cases, like when that weird merger happened with AT&T and Warner and Discovery, they pulled down a bunch of the HBO content to sell it to other platforms, like legitimate like things that were created specifically for HBO owned by Warner.
Mm-hmm.
And like I don't know,
you can watch all of the legendary Godzilla movies on Netflix. The only reason to have a Max was to watch Godzilla, in my opinion. But the legendary ones, the Godzilla 2014, King of the Monsters, Godzilla vs. Kong, that's all on Netflix now.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what they did. It's like, and I might be wrong about this, but I believe it's the person in charge of the whole company now is the former like CEO of the Discovery side of things. Which, let's be realistic, Discovery Channel hasn't been a fucking useful channel in 30 years. Like, mm-hmm. No one fucking watches Discovery Channel. Why the person who ran that channel into the ground is in charge of all of them is fucking beyond me. But they do. They just keep making these really weird business decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like, I feel bad for the people at Rooster Teeth that literally just got a memo today basically telling them, like, they don't have jobs anymore.
Yeah.
Like, that sucks, because, like, Rooster Teeth did a lot of stuff. They had game development stuff. They had their animation stuff. They had all of their on-camera, personality-driven stuff, plus all the production staff behind the scenes. Like, they made a lot of jobs. Apparently, they weren't a very good place to work for, but, like, the people that were there that didn't hate it, like, just lost their jobs, lost their way to pay for their bills.
That absolutely sucks. But when you have a company who's doing as much as Rooster Teeth was doing, like, I feel bad for the people. I don't feel bad for the company, because as everything you were saying,
I'm not
they were
saying
doing,
you should feel bad for the company.
Like with what they could have been, like, was Rooster Teeth only posting stuff on their subscriber platform?
For the most part, most of their stuff goes to their subscriber thing, just like Dropout.
I wonder if they even have an active YouTube at the moment, because
I don't know if like the Rooster Teeth proper does or not. And again, I don't, because I don't follow it enough. I don't know if like Achievement Hunters and Funhouse and stuff, I don't know if they're still part of Rooster Teeth or if they all spun off into their own things.
Mm-hmm.
But let's see, Rooster Teeth.
I mean, they have in the last. They've had like they do two videos a month over on YouTube.
Yeah, that, I know, just popped that up.
It's not a big, like, they're not going to make a lot of money, but like their most recent video, which was 2 days ago, only has 15,000 views for a company with 9.2 million subscribers. They really don't have retention. They don't have a lot of people viewing their stuff with 9 million subscribers. And they're only getting 60,000 views on Camp.
But that's because that's not like Dropout. Like they're not getting anything from people watching on YouTube. Like they try to push everyone to their website where you have to subscribe for money to watch their content.
True, but Dropout has 14.8 million. Their most recent video posted four hours ago on YouTube has 21,000 views so far in 4 hours. Like they have a greater audience, and they don't make a lot of money from advertisements and ads from YouTube, but that is still money that could have come in from people who aren't subscribing to your channel that still want to view.
Yeah. Look, and I don't disagree with that. I'm just saying, like, I understand their business model isn't YouTube.
Yeah, but it's still, like, they don't have... My point isn't as much, like, they're not on YouTube, so they're not making money, but they're not... I don't know how often they make new content. I don't know when the last time they had new content out, but they're not cross-promoting elsewhere to get people to go to their... They're not cross-promoting right. enough elsewhere. Yeah. Not saying they're not cross-promoting, they're just not doing it enough elsewhere to get people to go to their main channel. Whereas Dropout, they have a lot of their new stuff on Dropout. There's a bunch of stuff on their YouTube channel that it's like, all right, this if you want to watch more of this show, you can go and subscribe to our $4 service.
So looking at it, they were releasing multiple episodes of things every day. Like they were putting out. Honestly, I think part of the problem is they're putting out too much content.
And that could be it. Like,
They were running it almost like a TV station. Like, they still, like, their live thing is still up, and they literally have, like, a schedule of, like, every 2 hours or so, it's a different show from a different section of, like, their umbrella. And, like, what was the, G4 tried to do that with Twitch. And, like, it didn't work for them either. Like, producing that much content and having to pay the people to make it, like... It doesn't work without, like, the traditional television model, really.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's why, like, people... That's why Netflix keeps upping their rates, because they keep making bigger and bigger shows, and...
I am going to... Like, with what you're saying, yeah. The streaming model does not work. At least now anymore. Streaming model does not work. If you want to be a production company, you can do a streaming service, but... Dropout does one show every like 2 days or something like that.
Sustainable model,
or it's like one show a week or something like that. Where is their schedule for this week?
I feel like it varies depending on like what shows are releasing at the time.
Yeah, like they on their Discord they post their weekly schedule.
Okay.
And here we go. I'm looking at announcements, not schedule. So for this week, Monday is a behind the scenes of last week's episode of Game Changer. Wednesday is a new Dimension 20 episode. Thursday is it's Adventuring Party, but it's also Dimension. It's their other D&D show. And then Friday is their show with Vic, which is very important people is what it's called. But a lot of these shows, like, the production value isn't that big. They're not doing a lot of, like, high production shows. They're not doing, like, probably the highest production show they have is Game Changer. Everything else is just kind of people sitting around a table. They found a sustainable way to do this.
And they also, they make more, let's call it broad-reaching content.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, most of what Rooster Teeth does, or did, is... wrapped around gaming.
Yeah.
So, like, much like G4, like, that stuff's only going to go so far. Like, there are a lot of people that are into gaming, but, like, the three of us haven't watched Rooster Teeth in decades.
Yeah. I personally haven't watched it in about 5 or 6 years, and then prior to then, yeah, decades.
Yeah, like, it's just...
Yeah.
I just still think it's kind of crazy, like, out of nowhere, like, a company that's kind of been a mainstay of, like, internet content for over 20 years is just, yeah, no, we're done. Sorry, bye. Yeah. Good luck, everybody, finding new jobs. Like, we're just going to cut our losses.
There's a lot of original YouTubers that are calling it quits as well. Like, it is, the market anymore, and the amount of work that needs to be done for market retention and viewer retention is, like, some of them are going on to do bigger and broader things, and they don't want to do, they're going to still be ahead of the channel, but they're not going to be on their channel. They're going to have somebody else do it and stuff. But a lot of YouTubers, they're like, YouTube, with the state of YouTube at least, it's really hard to make this be a mainstay. So, like, for instance, Tom Scott, who started forever ago, his last Monday show from his primary channel was at the end of last year. And, like, there's a lot of digital creators that are just, like, it's becoming a little unsustainable, primarily due to potential burnout. And this is different. This isn't burnout. This is I think they made it unsustainable by releasing too much.
On their plate. Frankly, like, if WB was a better run company, they would have had them scale back, I think is the thing. Like, look, a good owner is going to look at the output of a company, be like, this isn't sustainable. We need you to make money. These three things bring in the most money. Like, let's push these things and start cutting back on these things. Like, it sucks to say, like, cut jobs, but cut 20% of the jobs instead of 100% of the jobs.
See, I feel like the model of giving them creative freedom is a choice. Like, I feel like they gave them creative freedom. And this is where I continue again argue, like, is this really WB's fault? Yes, WB bought them, WB continued to fund them, but they had the creative freedom to do what they wanted, and they made it unsustainable themselves.
We don't know that, though. We don't know that they actually had creative freedom. Like, it appears that WB put somebody from their corporate into the general management role for Rooster Teeth.
It could be A, they had creative freedom and they just went overboard with the money that they were given and it became unsustainable and they didn't make money. B, the person that WB put in charge made them overcreate content, which you're saying the person they put in charge is the same person from Discovery Channel, which also overmade content.
No. The person in charge of everything for WB Discovery is the former, his most recent position before that was as the CEO of Discovery.
Okay.
So he went from being the CEO of a channel that was failing to the CEO of a giant media conglomerate and has made numerous bad decisions.
Yeah. Like releasing The Flash, that cost twice as much and didn't even make back its initial value.
It's wild that they canceled two other movies to just get the tax credit, but they put out that movie that had no good press around it leading up to it at all.
Right.
No one wanted to see The Flash.
No one wanted to see The Flash. It had zero good press to it. And, like, my favorite thing, because I've talked to people about this, and they're like, well, they're going to lose all the money that they spent on making the movie. But because they advertised it, and advertising it's usually double how much the movie cost, you double that for advertising, they barely made back what the movie cost, which means that they spent more money to actually release the movie than they would have lost if they just didn't release the movie.
And they would have at least made some of it back if they just canceled it.
They're trying to producers this shit, man. They're trying to producers everything now.
Yeah, I mean, I said it before, like, that's what they did with Batgirl. Like they canceled that movie when it was already done. They did screenings of that movie. Like, not for the public, like internally.
Yeah.
No one said anything bad about it exactly.
Yeah.
Like you heard some of the people that saw it say, like, it wasn't great, but, like, it was as good as most of those movies were. And they just shelved it entirely, and they can literally never release it now. Because the government gave them money for it.
Yeah.
Like, they basically have to delete that shit off of, like, all their servers just to make sure that nobody does ever release it. And sounds like the same thing with Tom and Jerry. Or not Tom and Jerry. The Roadrunner. Roadrunner and Coyote or what? Something about, I think it was the Coyote versus Acme is what the movie was called.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, it's, I don't know. All that stuff is stupid. Just, I don't know. And the entertainment industry is a disaster.
It's an absolute crapshoot right now.
Like, I just got an email today from Comcast going, hey, would you like free Peacock? And I just said no and just deleted the email. Like, there's nothing on Peacock I want to watch. Why do I even want it for free? Because it's going to be free for 6 months, and then they're not going to tell me they're charging me. All of a sudden, my bill's just going to jump $20.
Yeah.
Twice. You don't want to watch WrestleMania, Cobb?
Not even a little bit. You know what, though? I will tell you this. The only time I've considered watching wrestling of my own accord was to watch Sting's final match.
And you would have had to pay like $60 just for that one pay-per-view.
Which is why I didn't.
Yep.
Like, had that just been available, like, had it just been on like a streaming platform I didn't own, like on Paramount, I would have given them $8 for a month, and I would have fast-forwarded to the very end, because I assume that was the last match.
It was.
I would have watched that one match to see the guy that, like, I grew up watching as a child and haven't seen since then, and then called it a day and canceled the subscription.
Yeah.
But, like, damn, they're still really $60?
Maybe only 50, but AEW's pay-per-views are expensive, but they only do, like, 4 a year. It's not like when WWE was charging 50 and doing 14 a year.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't realize that it was, that they didn't do them monthly the way WWE did. So, I mean, that is still a lot of money for, what, like, 3 hours?
Yeah, 3 or 4.
And people bitch about video games that are, like, 12 hours being 70.
Right.
Fucking wrestling fans.
But the thing is, the difference is, if you're going to watch a pay-per-view for wrestling, you're going to have a pay-per-view party, you're going to have a bunch of people there, and say you have 6 people go to your pay-per-view, and each of them give you $10, then it only costs you $10 to watch the pay-per-view, rather than each of those 6 people having to pay $70 to play that video game.
I mean, you're giving most wrestling fans way too much credit for having 6 friends they would be able to have come over to their house.
But you know what I'm saying. Like, they would at least... You, Drew, have been to wrestling pay-per-view parties. I'm sure you have.
Yes, I have.
That had decent number of people there. Like... But do you all
chip in for the cost of the pay-per-view? I think is the question.
Well, I mean, in fairness, for most of them was either pre-WWE Network and we illegally streamed them, or post-WWE Network and Peacock where it wasn't pay-per-view anymore. Like,
yes, so it was $8 or whatever to just subscribe for a month.
Yeah.
But it's still the idea of $70 for a 12-hour video game that 6 people have to buy, or $60 for 4-hour pay-per-view that one person's going to pay for and have their friends who are enjoying, who like wrestling, come and watch, because not everyone is going to buy that pay-per-view.
I'm just saying, people need to stop bitching about video game costs when they're going to see fucking actors for $60.
I disagree. People continue to bitch about video game costs because, like, Helldivers 2 is only $50, and look at that fucking game, it's fantastic.
Helldivers 2 is only $30.
Okay, correction. Helldivers 2 is only $30, and look at that game, it's fucking fantastic.
Is it, though?
Yeah. You would not like it, but...
Have you played it?
I have not played it, but I've watched a lot of people play, and it's absolutely something that I want to get into, and I will get into later this year.
I hear a lot of people want to get into it, and they just can't.
All that is seemingly fixed by now.
That's dealt with.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the servers are fixed. It's all dealt with, and people can actually play it now.
Oh, sorry. It was actually the middle of what we said. It's 40.
Okay,
but for the regular 60 for the like one that comes with extra shit version.
Yeah, look at that game. $40, and they're going to continue. Like, I think I heard. They already have robots and the bugs. And I think I heard that they're looking to add other references to sci-fi movies. I just can't remember what. Like, they have like a what's it called? A roadmap of other things they want to add.
Yeah, I mean, look, you can still 100% make games cheaper. I understand why certain games have jumped to 70. I don't think all games rate 70, but... No. I mean, you go back 30 years and game prices were all over the fucking place, depending on, like, how much memory they needed to put onto the fucking cartridge.
Mm-hmm.
At least it's stabilized now where, like, there is kind of, like, a top limit and then, like, tiers under that. It's not just like, oh, well, Chrono Trigger has an extra megabyte of storage required. It's $100 for just the base game.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, Rich, what's on the agenda?
On the agenda Drew went to this very small place called the Putt Shack. Yeah, yeah. But I don't really remember how the song goes. We all watched Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the 1992 movie. Are you serious? It was 92? I could have swore that was older. Me and Cobb...
fucking 32 years ago?
It seemed like it was an 80s movie. Come on now.
Because the early 90s are the 80s.
Yeah.
Rich, you forgot the subtitle there. Starring Candy Clark as Buffy's mom.
Starring Candy Clark as Buffy's mom. Well, no, it doesn't say starring. It just says... The first credit, and we'll get into this later, the first credit as the credits roll is Candy Clark as Buffy's mom. Me and Cobb, I don't think Drew got it, we're at least through Costa del Sol in Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. And also, just a little added mention, there was apparently an Xbox partner showcase thing that just had a bunch of games in it that, honestly, I don't really think a lot of people are interested in.
What was that today? I didn't see anything about that.
It was today, yeah. It was a half hour, and it was just game trailers.
Oh, I'll have to go back and watch that. Yeah, I didn't hear anything about that.
It was. I can even send you at the end of it. They put like an infographic of like a summary, basically, of what happened. That I didn't watch. I got sent images of, and I looked at it. I'm like, I don't know what any of these games are. So
that's fair.
I know one of them, and the one that I know. Well, no, let's see. Of the games I know, let's see, three, maybe four, technically. Frostpunk 2, I know of. Tales of K'Zara Zal. Final Fantasy 14, that they had on the partner preview, for some reason. And Persona 3 Reloaded Expansion Pass. Those are, like, the only four games I know. And at least one of them, Tales of K'Zara, was on the Nintendo thing last week anyway, so it doesn't actually matter.
well,
yeah.
That kind of aside, Drew, what's a putt shack?
Okay, so it's a chain of mini golf places that also have like bar and restaurant with them. They just opened one in Philly. It's in Liberty 1 or Liberty 2. Well, I forget which of those two buildings it's in.
Really?
But, yeah. So it's, you know, right there in Center City. But the thing, the like gimmick it has is all the golf balls have like a computer chip in it. And when you go, the one in Philly has four different courses. Each course has nine holes on it. You go up to the thing, there's an attendant at like the entrance to each course. And they'll, you go up to the touchscreen thing, and it will dish out a ball for each person, and then when you get to each hole, you put it on like the tee box. It will light up green, and it knows which person is playing, and you'll take all your shots in a row until you get it in. And instead of, I mean, it still technically is like playing for the fewest shots, because the fewer shots you get in, the more points you get. But it keeps your score, and you get points. And every hole will have like some sort of bonus thing that you can get extra points on that might lead you to the hole-in-one, or it's just like there was a trivia question hole, and you had to, if you got it right, you got 10 bonus points. There was a hole that was like beer pong, so it was these giant like fake red solo cups, and the one in the middle was plus 10 points, but then ones around it were like plus 8 and plus 6 or plus two, and different things like that. And you know, you play, and whoever has the highest score wins.
Oh, that's kind of cool. I'm actually scrolling through pictures of what I believe is the Philadelphia one. Was there one that it was like a series of drums, and the last one is like a drum with a cymbal?
Not on the course we played.
Is there more than one course?
Yeah, there are four different nine hole courses. So,
oh, wow. How big is the place?
It's actually pretty big, because when you walk in, the entrance is on right on a chestnut, and when you walk in, you see two sets of courses in front of you. But then, when we walked over to like the front desk to register or like check in that we had our tea time, they were like, okay, you'll be playing on, I'm pretty sure it was the Ruby course down the hall. And it's like, oh, hey, down this hallway is a whole nother one. And then down the hallway, the other direction was a different course. And it was like, wow, all right, this is pretty big.
Oh, yeah. Did not know that. Like, did not know anything like that was there.
It literally just opened the end of February.
Oh, so it's like new.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes a little bit more sense then. I'm also, I am almost never in that part of the city either, because there's not a ton, like, on that side of Broad that I care about.
Right, exactly.
But actually, not that it ever gets used, but my work office is actually in that building.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, I want to say it's technically the first one. I think we're in 100 or whatever. But yeah, like, I have not been to that office since before COVID, because it's just, it's kind of a pain in the ass. Like, there's no, we don't have, like, a dedicated space. It's, like, shared office space, so you just kind of, you get what's available that day. And gotcha. Because there are so many places that just have, like, they just rent a permanent office from that company, it's like, okay, here's a small closet with no windows for you to sit in today. Good luck. Mm-hmm. Maybe the internet works in here. We can't guarantee it, though. but that, like, mall that they, I assume, like, this place is kind of connected to the mall that they have, like, downstairs, like, the shops and all?
Yeah, it looked like you could definitely see into it from the mall area. But like I said, the entrance was on...
Actually outside?
Yeah, actually outside on Chestnut.
Okay. That's kind of cool, though. I might see if Erica wants to check that out at some point, because...
It's, like, two blocks from that, conveyor belt sushi place.
Oh, really?
Yeah, pretty sure.
I always forget that there is actually one of those in Philadelphia. Because, you know, like, you never think of that stuff.
Right?
Yeah. Good time, though?
Yeah. It was really cool.
Nice. Did you win?
No.
Way to go.
Yep.
You're supposed to be the sports guy. Can't even win a game of mini golf.
Nope. They hit the bigger point thing on the final hole, and that basically decided it.
Yeah, so it kind of reminds me, what's that driving range place?
Topgolf, yeah.
Yeah, there. It's kind of like that, with like the sensors and the balls, and
yep.
You're aiming for the different things.
I don't like Topgolf.
Why?
Because when I'm at a driving range, I am driving my ball as far as I can, as hard as I can, as fast as I can, as good as I can. And the one time I went, it was like I was hitting it further than everyone, but I was losing because I could hit it further. I was better at golf than everyone else because I've played it more than everyone else. But they were winning because they were in moderate and not the harder mode, and they had a closer thing. And my target was also not as far as I was hitting it. And I was thinking about it with this place too. I'm like, I don't know if I'm gonna like it because like I want to play golf. If I'm doing mini golf, I want to play mini golf. I don't want to have to worry about what can get me the highest score because golf is the lowest score. I want to get it from point A to point B by only hitting it two or three times and not have to like question and figure out like, well, if I bank it off here to get this little bonus thing, like I just don't know if I'd like this place.
And that's why golf is the worst sport.
Well, so generally, the things that would get you a hole in one are the things that would get you bonus points. So that would it more plays to your wanting to get the thing in as fast as possible. Getting the bonus thing gets you a hole in one almost guaranteed.
So it's like incentivizing to go about it with more skill than just tapping the ball and trying to line up the easiest shot.
Yes. I mean, I'm also not a fan of the one person at a time.
Yeah.
That's not mini golf. Like,
that's how bowling works.
You go, and then the next person goes, and then the next person. But bowling works with two frames at a time. Whereas mini golf is, depending on how good or bad your shot is, could be standing there a while.
I don't know. Looking at the pictures, and Drew, you can obviously confirm, none of these holes or whatever they're called, they don't look all that big. Like, I can't imagine it takes more than, even if you're really bad, more than a couple of shots to get it in.
Yeah, I think either of us took more than four shots on any hole.
That's mini golf in general as well.
Right.
Like, I don't know,
some of those ones
long.
Down the shore are pretty big.
I mean, I don't really do mini golf down the shore. I don't really go down the shore that often, so.
Yeah. But, so, I mean, I haven't done it in a while, but, like, some of, like, the outdoor ones in, like, Cape May and stuff, like, they're actually, they're pretty big courses. And, I mean, like, mini golf's the only golf I do kind of enjoy, because regular golf is fucking stupid.
I haven't played in regular golf in so long.
Yeah, because it's dumb. No one wants to play it.
I used to love playing it, and then I just... What stopped me playing it is I had a friend who picked it up and never took a class, never learned anything. I taught him how to play, and he played better than me.
That's how that goes, right? Those who can't do, teach.
Mm-hmm. And those who can't teach, teach Jim. Yeah, I know, exactly. But like, I just, it's frustrating, because I had been playing at that point, like, I'd been playing for 10 years, and he picked it up at 25, and is killing it, and crushing it, and is better than me. The first time I bring him out, and I'm like, I have been practicing this for 10 years, and I can't, I'm like, that's around when I stopped going. When I started to lose interest.
It sounds like you missed your calling as a golf teacher. You should right. have leaned into that and pushed that guy into the professional golfing and been his manager and simply ridden off of his success.
Oh, me saying he's better than me doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be able to go into professional golf.
Anyone can be a professional golfer.
No, you actually have... Look, golf is 50% skill, 50% luck, and you need that 50% skill. Like, you need to hold on to that 50% skill.
And 100% fucking boring.
I mean, it's boring to watch for sure. It's an atmosphere to play. It's enjoyable to play.
I'm mostly just making fun of it. Like, I genuinely have no mm-hmm. interest in golf beyond, like, again, I think mini golf can be fun if, like, it's a good place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like I've definitely played mini golf at, like, places where it's like, oh, this place sucks. Like, this is actually not fun. It was just a waste of, like, $20. But, you know, it happens. At least it was only $20 and not 70.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else you want to say about the place, though, Drew?
No. I'm going to go back and try some of the other courses, but...
You get to, like, pick which one, or do they just, like, give you whichever one's open?
We were just assigned to one when we got there, but I'd imagine if I go again, I could be like, oh, yeah, I already played that one. Can we do a different one? I don't know if they just, like, kind of stagger it as people are entering or what.
I would imagine they do something like that so that this way, like, you're not waiting too long behind other groups. Especially mm-hmm. if, like, a group of, like, five people are playing ahead of you. Like,
yeah.
That just makes it kind of bad for everybody. Mm-hmm. But, like, yeah, I can't imagine if you went in there and be like, hey, I already did that one. Can we do one of these two? Like, they might just say, like, sure, it's just going to be a 15-minute wait.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's like a restaurant. Like, I don't want to sit at a high back or at a high top. Can I sit at a regular table? Sure. Mm-hmm. It's just going to be an extra 10 minutes. What did you guys think of Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
I thought it was fine.
It's a 90s movie.
Yeah.
I thought it was a movie, but for it, I didn't think it was worthy of a series. For a movie like that to come out and have a series that, as far as I can remember, was a hit series, like, I was shocked that a movie like that was turned into the series that it became.
Well, I mean, it wasn't in a lot of ways.
But it was written and directed by Joss Whedon.
It wasn't directed by him.
But it was written by Joss Whedon, who Joss Whedon also did the Buffy series. Like,
yeah, he did the series because he was disgruntled at how they made the movie. He did not want the movie to be a comedy.
But well, what I'm saying is, I'm surprised that the way this movie turned out, that he was able to get the funding to create the series.
Come on, Richie. We all know Hollywood has no new ideas ever.
Yeah. But the series was like a year later.
Five. Oh. It was 5 years later.
Yeah.
5 years. No. Like, it's not like it was like, oh, the movie's over. Now let's do the TV show. It was like, I don't know. It's been 5 years. This guy keeps wanting to do this Buffy the Vampire Slayer thing. Let's just fucking do it.
Yeah. I want to say he had something else he did between the two that kind of got him, like, some goodwill on, like, television, like, with, like, executives.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, he was, Carrie Fisher did it, too. I can't think of what the term is. He was one of the people that used to get hired for, like, sitcoms and stuff like that to come in and, like, help fix scripts. Mm-hmm. So, like, he was never credited for it, but, like, he helped, like, adjust things and make them flow better.
Yeah.
But I mean, this movie didn't bomb, I don't think.
It's...
Did it?
The movie shows its age. Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Shows
absolutely.
Its age.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it did not age well, and I just, like, watching it, I thought the acting was so bad. So bad. And I was just like, how is this, like, what's her name, who played Buffy? I thought her portrayal was terrible.
Oh, see, I don't think it's that bad.
I thought it was so bad. I like the way she acted, the way she talked, the way she represented herself. I was just like, this is not good.
I mean, that's how a lot of stuff in the early 90s was, though.
Yeah, that was very SoCal, late 90s, or late 80s, early 90s, like Valley Girl.
Wow, this movie debuted at number 5 in the box office, grossed $16 million against a $7 million production budget.
There you go.
So that is how it got a TV series, apparently. I thought it was more... I actually thought the movie didn't do very well, and that Whedon had gotten more of a, like, goodwill thing through other work that let him kind of push the TV series. Because the TV series is so different. Like,
yeah.
Like, the TV... it was also a WB series in the early years of WB, where they were really pushing for that, like, 15 to 19 demographic.
And just needed content.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, like, I was actually going through after watching it and, like, looking to see, like, how much of the movie could be connected to the TV series, and there was less than I thought. I thought there was a little bit more that you could kind of look at and be like, okay, so, like, this actually is connected, but no, not really.
It was, she was a senior in high school, and, look, maybe this goes into the fact that the beginning of the movie, she's a terrible person.
Yeah.
She sucks.
Yeah.
Which, and
I
lost interest because she sucks.
Yeah, I mean, she's supposed to be like a rich Valley girl in the 90s, like all about herself. And like the whole idea was like she realizes that she had a destiny. It's just they made it more of a campy movie than it was apparently written to be.
And that might be a lot of why I don't like it. It's like it was like it could have been a good reluctant hero movie, but because of how she was acting, and like the scene that I got so annoyed with was like, but it's our last dance. Well, then there's the winter formal, and then there's the this dance, and then there's the that dance, and then, oh, don't forget the senior prom. And I'm just like, oh my god, I hate this.
So you don't really like 90s like teen movies, do you?
I mean, I was not a teen in the 90s, so I did not watch them, so probably not.
They're bad.
Like, I mean, they are. Like, some of them are good bad, but, like, some of them are actually just bad bad. But, like, that is just, that's a super 90s teen
movie. Yeah, it was dated. It was, like, I don't know. There was, near the end, I swear, I might have missed something. I watched during my lunch break, and then the last half hour was, like, I wasn't really doing work, but I was supposed to be working. And I was watching. Did she hurt her neck at one point?
There's blood on her neck at near the end when
yeah, she has, it looks like she has a scar on her neck.
I think it's just wet blood. I just don't know what it came from either. Yeah. I saw that too.
I was confused about that. When they went to during the chase scene when Sutherland died, they go to what's it called, the floats. There's just float storage. They just go to float storage, and the floats are actively moving.
Wait, was it float storage or was it a shutdown carnival?
Yeah, it was float storage. It was from the Rose Parade.
Yeah, okay. It was like a parade float storage, and the floats are actively moving, like they're on while they're there. I'm like, what the wait, no, this makes no sense.
I mean, the vampire set it up.
Yeah.
I just think it's wild, like, this movie had fucking Donald Sutherland and Rutger Hauer in, like, two major roles.
Yeah.
Also, the only thing in the movie that really bugged me was the scene where Lothos, Rutger Hauer's vampire character, is playing the violin with gloves on. And, like, not even, like, nice leather form-fitting gloves, like, kind of loose, baggy, like, felt gloves. There's no way you can play a fucking stringed instrument with that.
Yeah.
Especially at the violin, where like you're drawing the bow across all the strings, you're muting every string with those fucking gloves.
Mm-hmm.
True.
God.
Well, my favorite part was when her boyfriend's friend slapped her in the ass and she threw him over onto the ground and then into the lockers. My favorite part. Because fuck that guy.
Oh, yeah, that guy sucked. But also, how about Ben Affleck as the basketball player?
Yeah.
Was that, I didn't catch that.
During the final basketball game, when the one guy that got turned into a vampire is, like playing in the game and kind of, like, scaring mm-hmm. everybody, yeah. The first player he runs up to that on the opposing team with the ball is Ben Affleck.
Mm-hmm.
And he just hands him the ball and goes, whatever, dude.
And that the coach not knowing how to coach?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, I guess I probably don't like early 90s movies. But I don't really have a lot of frame of reference for memory of early 90s movies. But, like, just a lot of the tropes that were in this movie, I was just like, this is not... This is... It wasn't bad. It wasn't a bad movie. It was certainly a movie, though. And it was certainly, I would never seek to watch this movie.
Agreed.
So, I grew up watching this movie. Like, I remember seeing it when I was probably younger than I should have been to watch it. So, like, I have... Like, I definitely have more of a nostalgia... like for it, but like it's not good, but it's like campy good.
Yeah,
like look at Paul Rubens, like his death scene at the end, and then his credits where he's still dying.
I turned off the credits, so I didn't know that.
I didn't realize that he was still dying during credits, but I didn't like that's. The movie fully lost me when he died for 10 minutes. I also didn't realize that was Pee Wee Herman.
Yeah. Yeah, that's Pee Wee Herman.
You mean it wasn't Nick Cage?
Yeah, he did. He was kind of like summoning the spirit of Nicolas Cage, who was still alive at that point, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that scene is just it. Again, it's like a campy movie, so like I find that very funny.
Yeah.
Like him just completely leaning in. Like it's almost like it was the last day of filming, and he's just like, "Fuck it, we don't have enough film for them to make me redo this. I'm just gonna go all the fucking way."
Yeah. I just, like, that one, for as campy as the movie is, that was out of place. Like,
oh, it really was.
It was way more campy than anything else in the movie. If it lasted, like, half as long, it would have been campy, but still kind of fit with how campy everything else was.
What? I mean, that was, yeah, like, that lost me. I think maybe if I had gone into this movie knowing it was supposed to be comedy, like, I was expecting something a little bit more serious. And maybe a little bit horror-filled, because...
Do you have, like, a passing familiarity with the TV series?
I'd watched a lot of the TV series.
Okay, I don't think I remembered that. So, yeah, I can understand why that would be very...
Yeah, I used to, shocking. Like, the last episode I watched was basically when she, surprise, had a teenage sister. And that's when around where I stopped watching. But, like, okay. I basically watched almost every episode from beginning till, like, maybe missed, like, a season or two. But, like, yeah, I watched a lot of the series. I remember there was a friend that everyone had in town. Obviously not going to name names, but their last name had this. It was the same name as a tree. They had a party for the season premiere of one of the seasons, and we all went over and watched it. But yeah, so like I went into this expecting something maybe a little bit more silly and not super, or a little bit more serious with some silly, and it was just all full on camp.
Yeah, like this it's a comedy.
Yeah, and I think the other thing was like one thing that really like also lost me. It was also at the end, everyone just accepted that vampires were a thing, and they all banded together to stake and kill them. At the end of the movie, they all were like, all right, let's do this and kill them and not run away. Because, like,
where were they going to run? They were trapped in the fucking gym.
But then, just don't invite them in.
Say, they were already invited. They were part of the senior class.
But they were invited
that joke.
No, I didn't miss the joke. But, like, they were acting as if they couldn't get in, even after she said that. So, like, were they actually able to get in? But
that was confusing, because, yes, all did happen.
And, like, and vampire rules, you need to verbally invite them in as they are vampires. They weren't invited in prior to becoming vampires with a written invitation, but they weren't verbally invited in at that time. But also, it's the early 90s. They're not thinking of that continuity. They're not thinking of any continuity. They're just trying to make camp. And then I loved the principal. Principal, best part of the movie.
Of him walking around giving fucking detention at the end.
Yeah, I was like, okay, fine, this is good.
Yeah, like, I think that's the thing. Like, the movie has, it's got moments more mm-hmm. than, like, as a whole, it's very predictable. And it's got a lot of things where like you are like, it's not like offensively cringy, but you're going to cringe at a lot of the stuff they do.
Yeah.
But at least like, for what it's worth, for being like an early 90s movie, like it's not like offensive.
Like, no.
Yeah. You
know, look at some of the mid to late 90s teen movies. Some of those are just straight up offensive now.
Oh yeah. And unfortunately, like that's also a product of its time where that was like accepted more back then and whatnot.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But like this one is just kind of like, it's dumb fun. Like it's got goofy moments. And yeah.
Like I made mention to it when I guess you were watching it, Cobb, because you somehow missed the movie theater scene, and I was like, and this is where I didn't care about the characters, is when the girls are openly, loudly talking at the movie theaters, and then the two guys like say, hey, like kick their chair and say, hey, we're watching the movie, and then the girls act as if they're the ones that should be offended.
Well, yeah, at that point in the movie, you're not supposed to like them. Like, they're supposed to be bratty, snobby, rich girls.
And that's just that doesn't click with me.
It's a 90-minute comedy movie is not going to have like a proper character arc in a lot of ways. Like if it was a 2-hour dramedy instead, like she would have had more of an obvious like character redemption sort of thing. Mm. Where like at the end of it, like she would have been like, yeah, no, like you're all fucking idiots. Like I have something more important to do, which like she did kind of do, but also not like literally. So she still went to the dance and then the vampires attacked and then her and fucking Luke Perry drove off on their motorcycle that they stole. Maybe.
I don't know. I don't know how they got the motorcycle,
because that's the one thing like I couldn't tell if like Luke Perry bought that like motorcycle off of the guy when that like he was helping him with it, or if he was helping him with it and just fucking took it.
Look, she wore a wedding dress to her prom, or to her not senior but senior formal prom, not prom. Like,
look, man, California has a lot of dances.
But she wore a wedding dress.
Well, she thought she might die. Like, dress for success.
She definitely bought that
for
dress
the job you want.
She bought that dress before she knew she was a slayer. You know that.
I mean, yes.
I was just like, why is she wearing a wedding dress? And then the funniest part, we already made mention to it. Guys, did you know Candy Clark plays Buffy's mom in this movie? Buffy's mom, who is in less than 5 seconds of the movie, gets the starting credit, big and broad and bold. Candy Clark as Buffy's mom. She doesn't even get a name. She's not Mrs. Summers or whatever. I don't
Joyce.
Know Buffy.
Her name is Joyce.
But it doesn't say that. It says Buffy's mom.
I mean, that lady also isn't Joyce. Joyce was a sweet, caring mother who died of a brain aneurysm, and it was a very sad episode.
But Buffy's mom in this is just, oh, okay, I don't care, I'm a Valley mom. And I'm rich, and I don't care what my kids are doing.
Yeah, I mean, my favorite scene with her was when Buffy got home late after, I want to say it was the first time she, it was that first encounter with a vampire in the graveyard.
Yeah.
And her mom, like, comes out of her side, do you have any idea what time it is? And she says, like, 10, and the mom's just like, see, oh, I told you we were late.
We're late for dinner at 10 o'clock at night. Who goes to dinner at 10 o'clock at night?
Rich people. They don't have to work normal schedules. Everything's weird for them.
But I was just like, why did she get such like a bold cast, like a bold credit? Like
my theory, that credit is actually before the proper credits roll. Like it is like, you know, like they have like the header that says like by appearance, mm-hmm. and then it lists everybody. Hers is before the by appearance line. I wonder if that was like a...
It was in her contract.
Well, in her contract, or they didn't put it in the beginning of the movie, but they have to include it before the end credits. Like, there's actually a... there's like a contractual thing with, I guess, SAG, that certain actors have to have the credits at the beginning of a movie. That's why the original Star Wars movies in particular at the time weren't like part of something. I don't know if it was SAG or not, because they don't have credits before them. The movie goes right into the crawl and then right into the movie because it's a dramatic choice. So I'm wondering if she was supposed to be in the opening credits as, like, with Candy Clark, and they just put it at the end instead.
I don't know.
I don't know. I'm grasping there. It's dumb either way. Because then you had fucking Seth Green was a vampire.
Apparently.
Yeah. Seth Green was a vampire. Ben Affleck was a basketball player. Ricky Lake was Charlotte. I don't know who Charlotte was.
I was going to say, who the fuck was Charlotte?
And a lot of the... So, like, I know, like, in a lot of, like, especially 90s stuff, the people playing high schoolers always looked older. Like, Luke Perry. Like, in 90210, the man looked 40 when he was supposed to be, like, a 14-year-old. But, like, a couple of, like, those basketball players that were, like, friends with her boyfriend at the beginning, like, that one dude looked like he was probably middle-aged. Like,
half the high school team, like, at the very beginning, when they were showing the basketball team, one of the kids had more hair than I do on his arms. And I'm like, this dude is 40.
Exactly. Oh, shit. Thomas Jane was somebody in this movie.
Wow, really?
Yeah. Huh. Man, decade before he was the Punisher, he was Zeph in Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I guess a little more than a decade. But, yeah. So that anything else either you want to say about Buffy?
Nah.
I recommend watching the TV show. It actually still holds up.
Yeah.
Like, it's dumb, but, like, it's a good dumb. And, like, some of the, like, the emotional beats are actually, like, work 20-some-odd years later. But, Drew, you said you actually had a pick this time.
Oh, yeah, I do. From Dusk Till Dawn.
Oh,
that's a good one.
I've never seen it. It's vampires.
I've never seen the whole thing.
I've only ever seen the end sequence where they're fighting all the vampires.
I've only ever seen the beginning.
It's vampires and it's modern, so it fits.
What's it on, HBO?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was from the era where Quentin Tarantino still made good movies.
Yeah, and I forget, because this is also Robert Rodriguez. I think this is a Tarantino written, Rodriguez directed.
Yeah, Rodriguez directed, yeah.
Yeah, screenplay by Tarantino, story by Robert Kurtzman, and directed by Robert Rodriguez. Oh, that's right, George Clooney and Harvey Keitel.
Yeah.
I forgot that's who, like, stars in it.
I didn't realize this was only 96. I thought it was, like, early 2000s.
No, by the early 2000s, he was doing fucking those Kill Bill movies.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So in 2 weeks...
Great movie. Great choice, Drew. Great choice.
Yeah. In 2 weeks, we will watch From Dusk Till Dawn. Cool.
Nice.
All right. We're going to spend the next, I don't know, hour talking about Final Fantasy now.
I mean, probably. Probably about, like, half hour, 45 minutes, sure.
So I guess before we talk spoilers, Rich, are you enjoying yourself?
I am. I'm enjoying myself. I don't think I'm enjoying myself quite as much as Final Fantasy VII Remake, but it's getting there. Now that I'm, like, further into the game, it's getting there to the point where I'm having a lot of fun, because it kind of just throws you into the open zone for the first area, and, like, me being me, I had to do everything, and I was just like, man, I want to get into the game, and it's a lot of side stuff, which is interesting, and they explain it properly on how to make it, why you do it. It's still a little weird that some of them, you have to fucking climb towers, but, like, other than that, like...
I love that you climb towers, but I mean, this is very minor, just game mechanic. You climb towers, but it doesn't reveal the map.
It doesn't reveal the map. It only reveals POIs in that general vicinity of that tower. And also, it shoots a giant beam of light into the sky. Wouldn't the people chasing after you know where you are at this point?
No, because no one knows that Cloud's doing it.
But no one touches those. No one's touched those since the war. So wouldn't Shinra turn around and be like, well, who's touching this thing? Let's go check it out. And
no, they're busy tracking all the dudes in capes.
Yeah.
Drew, you didn't pick this up yet, right?
No, not yet.
Oh, you are very broken up all of a sudden.
So it was because I was a little bit away from my computer, grabbing a drink, thinking you guys were going to talk for a little bit more.
Yeah. No, I mean, I didn't know if you had gotten it or not. So.
No, I downloaded the demo, but I still haven't started it. I've just been too busy this last week.
That's fair. Sorry, Rich, what were you going to say, though?
But no, like after doing the initial like open zone stuff and learning about it all and getting into it, and then honestly, once you go towards the Mithril Mines and or not even going towards Mithril Mines, once you go back to Calm and like unlock the side quests and things, that's where I was like, all right, here we go. The game is good. I'm enjoying this. I'm having more fun. And then you get to the Mithril Mines and it's good. And then all of Junon, I had a blast with. And then just fucking literally my favorite part, when you first go to Costa del Sol, it is 100% a beach episode.
Yeah.
It is a beach episode. And I loved it. I loved it so much. And it was needed.
We'll get to Costa del Sol. Costa del Sol. I always get that name wrong in my head for some reason. I think because of, you know, 25 years of only reading it.
Oh, well, I mean, I said, I can't even tell you how many times I said Junon and not Junon.
Same.
Because that's how when we were stupid young kids, we didn't really think about, like, it is spelled Junon, but we didn't know, we pronounce it J-U-N-O-N, Junon.
Yeah.
Or whatever, and not J-U-N-O-N.
Sure, why? But, I mean, same thing, like I still say Mako, not Mako.
Yeah.
Like, that's just a habit. But yeah, I actually agree with you. Like the very beginning of the game, like it didn't grab me right away. But after it kind of like once it opens up and gives you stuff to do, where it's like you can just follow the story or you can kind of go do this other stuff, I'm like, okay, I remember how to play. Like this makes sense because
yeah,
I did the demo like 2 weeks prior to the game's release. So I didn't have to redo the majority of that. The only thing that they make you redo is walking around Nibelheim and then, just walking out into the wilderness and then the whole end sequence with the fire, which was incredibly frustrating to do two times.
Yeah.
But yeah, like once it kind of opens up and you're kind of like free to go do things, like, and I feel they've done a good job of giving you reasons to actually do the side quests.
Yeah, you get good rewards for doing the side quests. You get good, and I mean that's like doing all of the side quests in this one. It's worth it because you get things for materials that you wouldn't normally be able to buy. You get points to be able to buy materials that you wouldn't normally be able to buy. So it makes it worth doing. Like they call it world intel. And so what it is in each region, there's X amount of points that you can go onto the world. That will be highlighted yellow. So you go to the towers, you do the towers, which some of the towers you don't even have to climb. It's just right at the bottom of the tower. Other towers, you do have to climb. It varies. And I appreciate the ones where you don't have to climb them. But, like, I still climb all of them just in case there's items out there. But, like, everything that pops up yellow, you get points. And those are research points that you can purchase. Auto cast materials, or my favorite, and they're both on cloud, is fire and ice and lightning and wind.
I haven't gotten the lightning and wind one yet.
How did you not get that one? How have you not gotten that one?
I wonder if we'll talk about when we talk about spoilers. There is one thing I didn't do yet, in the Junon section because I didn't have the patience for it at the time.
Maybe it's linked to the VR stuff.
So.
Of your rewards?
Again, we'll talk to it once we get into spoilers, because I don't want to give away too much of that stuff. But
no, it's fine.
Yeah, like, the world intel stuff is cool, but yeah. I also just meant the actual side quests that they give you from people. Everyone's kind of wrapped into the story somehow. Like, there are a couple here and there that are just kind of dumb, like goofy things. But for the most part, you're being asked by people to do things because, like, Shinra fucked up, or somebody that you know knows a person that needs help. Like, things are tied together in interesting ways so far.
Yeah. So, like, for instance, like, I did not know, and maybe, like, this is a broadened, expanded universe with this game, but I didn't know that Lower Junon and that whole region was technically a different country that Shinra conquered.
Yeah, so I don't think that was ever part of the original stuff. Drew, do you know if that was ever a thing in the original games that you can think of?
Not that I can think of, but it's always possible that that was a thing that gets randomly mentioned somewhere.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe the first time you play the game and you talk to every single NPC, you piece it together, but if you've played the game like 9 times and you skip all the NPCs, like, yeah, no, of course you don't remember it.
And it's the same with, like, the Calm region. Is, like, Calm was its own, like, pseudo sort of country that was at war with Shinra until Shinra just took over.
Yeah, which is basically what Shinra does.
Yeah, and like, I also, I mean, I didn't 100% realize that, like, you know, Shinra was a weapons manufacturer first and then an energy company. I thought they were just a weird energy company that just has a PMC, which makes no sense, but sure.
Yeah, no, I mean, that they are the poster child for capitalism is bad.
Yeah, yeah, it's the perfect kind of game to play nowadays, guys, because capitalism sucks.
Yeah. But yeah, so we're both enjoying it. You're probably like 2 hours more time on your clock than I am. But that's only because of the weirdness with me getting to skip the intro. But I think we're basically at the same point. We've both left Costa del Sol and like have just sort of like wandered around that region a little bit.
I did the first tower, and then I was like, you know what? We just ended with a boss fight. We just got a new character. Let's call it here, because it was, I think at that point, it was like 10, maybe just after 10:30, or just before 10:30. So I was like, let's just call it here, and I'll get, it's a lot of bonus stuff right now. It's a lot of side quests and whatnot that I have available that I'm going to do, and so I didn't want to just sit there and do that at the end of stream. So
yeah, that makes sense.
Literally, we're like at the same point, surprisingly, because I should say 24 hours into the game between Friday and yesterday.
I am actually at 22 hours.
Yeah,
but like I started playing on Thursday, and I've played at least a little bit every day.
Yeah, you started a day before I did, but I sank 10 hours into it on Sunday.
I think I didn't play that much, but I played from like 10:30, 11 o'clock that morning until like 6 o'clock that night.
12 to 10 straight. At one point, I ordered 12 to 10. I would have played Sunday or Saturday. It was, I think I was 2 to 8:30. But that's only because I had ended up ordering pizza and it just got there. And I was like, it's 8:30. It's going to take me like 2 hours to eat this pizza if I continue to play games while eating this. I'm just going to call it now because I need to eat it to not mess up my stomach.
Yeah, like I didn't play much on Saturday because we did stuff. So like I played some Thursday after work. I played some Friday after work. Played a little bit on Saturday, but then yeah, I did like a big chunk on Sunday, and then every day this week I've played probably at least 5 hours between like playing like in the morning before work, because I haven't had to go on site so far this week. Friday might actually be the only day I have to go on site, because fun times, our toilet's leaking from the supply line, like the thing that runs the water into the tank when you flush, like that like refills with clean water.
Nice.
Yeah, so plumber's coming tomorrow, but before I could call a plumber, I had to like reach out to all my clients and be like, hey, do you mind if I'm just remote this week? Because I didn't want one of those weird things on the phone with the plumber. It's like, yeah, I can do tomorrow, but I might have to call you back and reschedule if I can't reschedule work.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that notwithstanding. So like, I've had a little more time at home to play, like lunches and stuff like that, where, and then like after dinner, like have put in like a couple hours each night. So it's kind of kept us in a similar spot without,
yeah,
with like you playing like long streams and me kind of playing like a couple hours here and there for the most part.
Mm-hmm. Have there been anything that you ran into in the game that you've done in the game that you were just like, I don't need to do this? For instance, I like what they're doing with the artifact retrieval stuff, the proto relics, but in region one, in the Calm region, where you had to deal with Beck and his crew, I had enough of them after like the second encounter with them.
So I did all of that. The one thing that I skipped in the Junon section is the relic, because I was having a terrible time getting through those games. Which let's swap over to spoilers now. I'm gonna just make a note of the time so that we don't have to sort of dance around things. So if you don't want to know spoilers for Final Fantasy Rebirth, from the beginning of the game through Costa del Sol about 20 hours in. Like, just stop listening. Like the show's going to be over after this, I think. Or, like, mute us, but let it keep playing so that, like, it registers that the episode was played.
Well,
that,
we need full retention, so just yeah. Put us all the way down to 1% and go do something else.
But yeah, so just to finish up that thought then, I did not do the Fort Condor stuff. I was having a terrible time with those fucking missions, and I just, at the time, I wasn't having fun doing them at the time, because it was kind of a, you have to do it this thing.
Yeah, the Fort Condor stuff is pretty rough in this one. I had at least the last one for sure, but like maybe the last two, I had a tough time where I had to restart a handful of times. But like it's still fun, but it is difficult because it became more of a puzzle and less of a strategy game. Trying to memorize and figure out who's coming where and when and how you're going to have to place your tokens to counter what's coming, so that like. The rule in this one, this time, and I can't remember if it was the same in the first one, was if you don't win in 2 minutes, you lose.
And I don't think it was like that in Intermission. No. So, like, the first round, I had both of the Eagles down and the boss halfway, mm-hmm. and both of my Eagles and bosses were still full health, and I lost. And it aggravated me a lot. I'm like, cool, I'm not doing this anymore. And I left and did other stuff. I went back to it. Took four more times to actually take the boss down, and then they're like, cool, now go do it again, but it's harder. And I'm like, no, I'm good. Maybe I'll come back like later in the game and give this another shot, but not right now.
I don't think not doing that is going to keep you from getting Wind and Thunder, because all it was a purchase thing. It wasn't like unlocked from doing it. It's
probably locked behind the combat simulator then, because the only ones I've done so far are Titan and Phoenix.
Yeah, it could be. The combat simulator is fun. I did all the learn to play ones, and like some of the other stuff, like it is worth doing, but no, because if it were locked behind the you get the reward for completing a combat simulator. It's not a purchase from the combat simulator. You just might not have purchased it.
No, because I was just in his thing today purchasing stuff, because after you get Yuffie, I realized that I hadn't gone in and gotten the summons yet. And I like what they're doing with that, where if you do all of the research stuff around the planet, you can basically like pick your pain tolerance against them.
Yeah, so because in Final Fantasy VII Remake, in hard mode, there were actually more summons in hard mode, available summons in hard mode, but to unlock a summon, you had to fight it in the VR system, and in that one, you just had to fight it, and you had to get good. In this one, like, they make them pretty damn brutal, and so, yeah, you research, there's, like, I can't remember what they're called, but there's, like, data points throughout the world, ancient data points throughout the world that you can go, and it teaches you about the summon of that region. And then it makes the fight easier and your materia summon stronger. So, for instance, with Phoenix, if you don't do that, you have to fight a hard Phoenix battle, and Phoenix just deals damage. But if you get all of them, Phoenix has Raise and Arise on its casting ability.
Yeah, and so when I did it, I remember those summon fights in the first game. I remember how fucking brutal they were, even on normal mode. Yeah. And I was not looking for that sort of time commitment this afternoon, because I literally just got them this afternoon.
Yeah.
So I put them on like the easier one. Phoenix was still actually pretty hard because of like the way that fight works, where you have to take out its adds first before you can do damage to it.
Yeah. I mean, Phoenix. I feel like putting them at the easiest for me, at least in my opinion, they're a little bit of a pushover. But it's like, I don't know if there's an achievement to fight them at the hardest, and if there is, I'll wait until I'm level cap and have all my ability points and whatnot to do that.
Yeah, I was checking. I'm pretty sure. So I already missed one of the trophies that, like, there's no going back for it. So it's like, cool, that officially means I don't even have to worry about getting trophies at all.
What did you miss?
A performance thing, I think it was, maybe.
Oh,
yeah. During the parade, Yeah. I got the presidential thing, which I think you get no matter what.
I think you get no matter what, probably.
But I didn't get the performance one that
the
motorcycle dude got instead.
Yeah,
so
that same thing happened to me too.
Yeah, so that's a trophy to get that. And I didn't get that, and in order to redo it, you have to replay the game. So
I'm sure it'll have a chapter thing once you beat the game.
I mean, that's like, true.
Like
but
it
like,
did with the with like they did with the original. You can go back to chapters. But like, yeah, it's I'm gonna play the. I don't trophy hunt per se. I wait till I'm at the end of the game and beat the game before I start looking into fully what trophies I could be getting or could have gotten. But yeah, I'm not too worried about what I missed. I figured that was a trophy. Did you have what it? What was your perform? Like how many stars did you have for each of your performances? I had 3, 3, and 3.
I feel like I had 3 for each of them. I only missed, I want to say, like 1 or 2 things across them. I think the thing that got me was I don't know the ones that you're supposed to tap to.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I was actually getting them or not because they seem to end early.
If they ended early, then you got them. If you tapped it enough, it would disappear.
Okay, so I could never tell if that's what was happening or not, if I was not tapping at the right rhythm and thus
it was missing
that mark.
If you tapped enough, it would disappear, and that would be the end of what you had to do. The hard ones for me were the holds, because you had to let go at a certain time, too. It wasn't just let go after it was over. You had to let go, like, when the thing... And then trying to realize the rhythm, because, like, I had 3 stars across the board, so 3-star difficulty across the board for all of them. I had found all of the troops that you could find to do this and put it together. And so, like, there were times where I'm like, I'm hitting it, and it's like, I hit it just as the circle goes through, but I hit it just too late. Maybe there's a little bit of input lag between my system or something, but it ended up being that, like, I needed to hit it as the border closed in and not as the circle went through or something like that. I don't know, I might be playing a little, I might have to, like, recalibrate my system to make sure there's no terrible input lag or something.
Out of curiosity, did you play the piano at all?
Fuck the piano. Fuck that thing.
The first thing I did with playing the piano was I played the beginning of Welcome to the Black Parade.
Of course you did. I'm not surprised. So, Drew, here's how the piano works. You go up to the piano, and you sit in it, and you can put, like, you can, if you want, you can put, like, any sheet music that you found down, and you can play that sheet music, or you can just noodle on it.
Uh-huh.
And what it is instead of hitting, like, the buttons on your controller, it is the directional sticks.
It's bad. It's a bad setup.
And then you can hit like the shoulder buttons for different notes on those directional sticks. And so, then you can do performances, which luckily the performances will automatically change to whatever note you're supposed to be hitting when you have to hit it, but it'll be like an amplitude or whatever, where there's a bar that goes to the end, and then you have to hit the stick in the direction of the note you're trying to hit. But you have to look at both circles, and you have to be ambidextrous to be able to do 2 notes at once at times on the control sticks.
But that the hitting 2 at once wasn't bothering me. Like, I wasn't having trouble, like, following that. Mm-hmm. I was just having trouble with some of the timing.
Yeah,
but specifically, like, hitting just 1 note, not that hard. Because it's a circle, and everything is, like, cut into, like, pie shapes.
Yeah.
So, like, it starts small in the middle, and then by the time it gets to the edge, it's like a wide line. So you just have to hit the stick in that direction as it gets to the end of that particular slice.
And to add to that real quick, you can't circle the stick around. You have to hit it and let go to get it back into the middle and then hit it down again.
Exactly, and that's what I was struggling with, was when it was, like, a G and then a B and then an E going, like, very rapid fire, having to drop it back to a neutral position before moving. I kept just naturally kind of circling it, so you'd get that bad note in the middle. That's what was killing me.
So basically,
that's frustrating.
Basically, yeah, if to like put a, like, in a little bit more visual, if you need to go from south to southwest to west, you have to go hit down left, and then hit left, and, like, tap it. And it's so bad. So bad.
But in its defense, as far as like being able to just mess around on the piano goes, it has every note you can possibly play. With like minor like having to hit other buttons to like swap the dials. And you can set both of them to the same or different things. So like when I was messing around doing the intro to Black Parade, because I was having that trouble with the circles, I set both analog sticks to the exact same note patterns, so that they were both just the whole single notes. There were no sharps or anything. And I knew that on the left one, I think it is, if I hit like the right bumper, it would swap to sharps. So I was able to very easily just kind of like move both of them into the directions of those letters and play the intro to that song. But like if you're trying to do anything more complicated than that, it gets a little too much because there's not a good way to swap between some of them. Going from like whole notes to like your sharps or your flats was easy, but switching to like chords and like diminished notes and things was you couldn't do that on the fly. Glad the sheet music actually does it for you. Did you do the beach performance?
I did.
Yeah. Okay. I did not get a good score, but I did it.
Yeah, I don't know what kind of score. They said I did a good job in game, so I don't think it really mattered what your score would have been for that.
So it's just like the other ones, the higher the other games you had to do there. The higher the score you got, the better the rewards you got were?
I don't think so, because it didn't let you redo it.
Well, yeah, that one you couldn't redo that one, but it did have three different things. And if you go back there after the fact, there's a man standing there now who, anytime you get an A rank on a performance piece, will give you a reward.
Yeah, and I think I don't remember how many. I only got one reward for it. But I don't know if I failed getting like that. Getting all of everything because I didn't do that, I'm gonna be so mad. But there was a few that only had one reward for them. It wasn't just that one. There was one other.
The Cactuar one only had one reward because it wasn't skill based. It was just go find the four pictures of Cactuar.
Yeah, which like I mean they could have done multiples with that. Where it's like you find just one picture, or you find two, three, or four. Because that's another cool thing they're doing with the side quests is like for instance. When you do the performance in Junon, so do you remember when like you're performing for Rufus, at your Cloud dressed up as a soldier, right. And you're performing for Rufus, pretending to be a soldier. They do that, but in this time, you become captain of your squad, and you have to go run around and get as many of your squad that you can find in this area. You only need 5, but there's 10. And so it'll track it like 0 out of 5 and then 0 and however many out of 10. All side quests like that, you only need X out of like up to 5 instead of 10. You don't need to do it all. But if you do it all, if you get all of them, you get more rewards. And like the rewards are worthwhile. And so like with the Junon thing, if you find all of them, then you could put together like the best performance to try to get the highest ranking.
Yeah, did you do the fashion show date thing?
Yeah, I'm still doing it. I'm going on the Chocobo ride right now.
So that is the one like of those fetchy quest sort of things that didn't seem to have that so far. Like everything else has been like, yeah, we only need 3, but if you bring us 6, you just get more rewards. One is just, you just need to find X amount of these. Like
most of the side quests, though, only have like 2 or 3 parts to it. Whereas the 2 side quests that me and you are on have at least 6 or more. Friggin', what's his name, Joey or whatever? He has got like a 10-part side quest.
Oh, yeah, Johnny's is crazy. Johnny. That fashion one is only 3 parts.
No.
Yeah.
It's, you go do the gun, you go do... the game with Red, you go get the Chocobo, you go on a walk with the Chocobo, and then there's like 3 more parts after what I've already done.
No, I'm done it. Once you're done, you just, they go and they, you're done.
They don't give you, like, the Chocobo to go for a walk?
No, you actually have to rent the Chocobo after this. That booth there, you get the, you have to get the rental card for the Chocobos after that.
She gave me the rental card and told me to go for a walk on the beach with the Chocobo.
Oh, so she wants you to go down and collect seashells.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the last part.
Yeah, well, I mean, but that's the thing. Like, there's three events, but, like, if you look at the quest, like, if you're looking at Johnny's, there's, like, 10 little circles under the quest line. There's, like, 6 or 7 little circles under this date quest line.
I think that's because you have to collect 3 shells.
I don't know.
So it might count all 3 shells that way, but yeah, once you do the shells, like, that's it. They invite you to to the fashion show after that.
Yeah, which I mean, I'll be doing that next time I play. So
to jump all the way back, because we kind of started near the end. What did you think of the opening?
Meaning playing as, like, leading up to playing as Zach and doing the Zach stuff right away and all that.
Yeah, so like the game literally opening in an alternate timeline.
So unfortunately, we didn't get to save my initial reactions because I ended up deleting the VOD because my system crashed. My entire system crashed twice while I was starting to play this game.
Like your PC or your PlayStation?
My UPS battery crashed. Like it would. Apparently I was somehow overloading it which doesn't make sense to me. And I still have to contact Amazon and talk to them and see if they can if there's a fault in it. But I had my PC, my one PC monitor, my PlayStation 5, and my modem all plugged into the battery part of it because that's all the stuff I want still on if the power goes out.
Is this like a small, like, black kind of like under desk one?
Yeah.
Those don't have a very high capacity to them.
But it's supposed to at least draw from the, like, it's only supposed to kick on if the power goes out. It's not supposed to kick on if the power is on. Like,
it shouldn't have been crashing unless your power in your house is, I can't think of the word for it.
I had been playing games with just my monitor, PC, and router on, and my PS5 was on standby for a week. It was the PS5 that was seemingly probably overloading it or something. I don't know.
I mean, that sounds about right. Between the PS5 and your PC, like,
yeah,
both of those are pulling more power than those type of batteries can handle.
But those are the two things that I want to be able to, like, shut down properly if the power goes out.
I mean, yes, absolutely. I understand.
Point of this thing. So I'm just like, but I'm like, I don't understand.
Those things are also meant for, like, like desks, like it's just supposed to be a PC and a monitor really plugged into them.
It's got 4 plugs to it.
I know.
It's got 4 plugs to the battery outlet. Dude, so like,
I install them for clients all the time, and I have to explain to people, like, these aren't going to keep your shit on for long. We're only plugging one monitor and your PC into it, otherwise you're going to overload them.
And like, I don't expect it to stay for long, but like, if power kicks out, if I have a quick power surge where the power goes out, but everything else, these things stay on for 30 seconds. Like, I got to contact Amazon, but because of that shut down twice. I ended up having to, I unplugged it and plugged everything back into my old power strip. And then, so we lost my reaction where I was like, ooh, I knew it. This is all in the past. This is past stuff. And then it ends up not being past stuff. Like, I thought the Zach stuff was like, my theory was, oh, they're combining Crisis Core and Final Fantasy at the same time. And they're showing us the Zach stuff, the Crisis Core stuff, where Zach gets to Midgar.
But that's not that, right?
But it's not. Like, it's modern day. And I'm like, what the? I'm so lost. And now, like, to fast forward, you find out, like, oh, Holy has no color, and Aerith is missing memories.
Yeah. So they're she's saying that her memories were taken after the ghost things at the end of the first game.
Yeah.
And there's that line in Calm where she mentions knowing more about Cloud but having all those memories taken from her.
Yeah.
But she's also been talking to somebody
who is like, I think that's supposed to be Red's grandfather, which is a weird voice choice for him.
I was going to say voice is so high pitched. I thought maybe it was supposed to be Zach.
But I mean, I don't know, because, like, Red knows whoever she's talking to, because Red's always in the room.
But
it's somebody connected to Red.
So the last time, though, in Johnny's place, Red was, like, sleeping on the bed and then heard her talking and got up to go see what was going on.
I think Red was even, like, Red was watching, was there as, was guarding her, but, like, he was in the room in Calm, or, no, in, or was in Junon, he was in the room when she was talking to whoever was high-pitched. Like, Red knows who she's talking to. Red knows, might know more than what he's...
Oh, yeah, yeah. For. I'm not saying he doesn't. I'm just saying, like, it's a weird thing that's going on.
I'm so interested in it. I'm so confused about the past stuff. What really got me confused was the Kyrie stuff, where in the Calm region, she's like, "Oh, you're Cloud. You're the merc from the Undercity," and blah blah blah. And I'm like, "Aren't you questioning the fact that you were holding a unconscious Cloud like a week ago after this attack?" Because Zach gave her an unconscious Cloud during the very beginning of the game.
Oh, you do know that that's literally a separate timeline, right?
Is it?
Yeah, everyone was dead.
Yeah, but I don't know if it's a separate timeline or
what.
Like, they haven't really said anything. We don't know what's going on, which is why it's confusing.
But you can't, if you look at the way that the first game ends. So what happens there is, Cloud never made it to Midgar. He was not there when the plate got dropped. Avalanche was still doing what they were doing. So Cloud was not part of whatever happened at Midgar at that point. That's when Zach and Cloud both get there. Because you never played Crisis Core, did you?
I did.
Oh, did you? For some reason, I thought you didn't. So Crisis Core ends shortly before 7 picks up. It's not 5 years that Cloud is on the run. Like, Cloud and Zach were held captive in the mansion for 5 years. That's why Cloud has the glowy eyes, because he was submitted to the Mako stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, so this is basically like they get back late. They don't get attacked by Shinra on the way, and he gets there and like Aerith is dead. Like, that's her being dead. She dies in his arms.
Aerith dies.
And they show, like, Barret and Tifa are likely dead. I think it's alluded to that Red died crashing the helicopter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, so that I took it as that is just, that's a separate timeline of, like, what would have happened if Zach was there. My theory, and I actually said this on a Discord, that I wonder if the third game will be called Reunion, and then somebody pointed out that's what they called Crisis Core. So they probably won't do that. But I feel like the third game is going to be the timelines merging.
There's we haven't experienced a lot of Zach. And Zach is a mainstay on, like, the game art and, like, the case. No one has a game case anymore. But, like, the case art. Like, Zach is on there.
This game was released on 2 discs, and they fucking labeled them wrong in Japan.
Did they?
What?
Yeah, so you know how, like, I don't know if the last time you guys had a multi-disc game, but the way they do them now is there's a data game and a play game, or a play disc. So there's one disc that you put in that installs the majority of the game, and then there's the other disc you put in that to actually play the game, basically. It has some of the game content split across them, but, like, you don't have to swap discs at any point, is the idea.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, in Japan, they labeled them backwards, so the play disc was the data disc, and the data disc was the play disc.
Well, weird.
Good times. But yeah, so I agree, though. Like, Zach is shown in all the promotional material for it. So there's got to be more for him in this game. I'm just thinking in the next one is where things will actually merge. And this one will hit points where they do these cuts to this alternate timeline with Zach.
Yeah, I want to know more. And that's where I'm like, I'm so... Because we already know this is an alternate timeline from the original Final Fantasy. Like, our main Final Fantasy is an alternate timeline from the original Final Fantasy. And so now we're in a Final Fantasy that has two separate timelines going on into it. And, like, I'm intrigued, and I want to know more. And that's why, like, I want to keep playing, and I want to get into it, and I want to beat it so that I know everything.
Yeah, it's very much, like... Where we're both at now, we had that big thing at the beginning with Zach, and then there's just been, like, small little thing since then. Like, mm-hmm. In Calm, after you do the flashback, Tifa and Aerith are talking, and, like, in their room, and Tifa just goes, none of that happened. Like, she says it differently than that. But
well, no, she never said none of that happened. She just says, as far as I can remember, as far as I know, Cloud wasn't there.
Well, okay, yeah.
So, like, and that
stuff happened.
Like, everything happened. She just did not know, because Cloud still doesn't know, that Cloud thinks he was Zach.
Yeah, exactly.
She did not know that Cloud was there to experience everything.
Yeah, true, true.
And so, like, she does not know that Cloud was there. He knows he was there. And he potentially did everything that he said he did, like going into her room and going through her stuff because he's a jerk. Yes, I did that. And they actually was like, did you really go into my room? Did you really go through my stuff? You're a jerk. Gross.
I went into the room for the piano because I remember in the original game, and I couldn't remember the exact, like, order of operations, but in order to get Final Heaven or Seventh Heaven, her final limit break, you had to play the piano like two different times.
Mm-hmm.
So I made sure to go in there and play the piano so that if that was a requirement, I would get something at later on in the game.
Yeah. So like they like she yeah, so she didn't say, oh, none of that. She was like, Cloud, as far as I know. Like the way she worded it, they made her word it right. As far as I know, Cloud wasn't there. So this way, like, she can bring it up to Cloud, like, I don't remember seeing you. And he can be like, no, I was there. We were there. I defended you. But it's then going to turn into, like, that we're going to get the sick Cloud thing. And I think that's where this game is going to end, with the collapse of Crater and you losing Cloud. And then the next game, you're going to find Zack. And then Zack is going to be the one at the Mako River to help Cloud.
Oh, you know, that would actually be an interesting way for that to go. Yeah, I've managed to avoid finding out anything about, like, where the story goes or where the game ends in this one.
Because
mm-hmm. It is one of those things where I know how it's supposed to go.
Yeah.
But just enough has been changed that I'm like, they're doing interesting things. Like, all the stuff that I remember is still there. Like, like you still do the fucking presentation for as a Shinra soldier. You still do the dolphin stuff.
I was confused when I first saw the dolphin in Lower Junon, and then in Under Junon, and I was like, why is there a dolphin? What the fuck is this about this dolphin? And then like we get into the fight and everything, like, oh fuck, the dolphin! And I completely forgot until it was getting ready to do the CPR scene, and I was like, oh come on, no, I'm not gonna have to do CPR on Yuffie, am I? And then it was like, oh, no, she's fine. You don't have to actually do the CPR scene. I was like, oh, good, because that was, like, one of the worst things in 7.
So, this is minor. The gym bros are back eventually. So, like, do you remember in Remake, the gym minigames?
Yeah.
Those are back and harder than before.
Oh, great.
There's one where, and it's harder because they're fucking, in their defense, they're actually using the adaptive fucking triggers and stuff like that in an interesting way. It's that same, like, you have to hit all of the shoulder buttons in order. Yeah. And after a few rounds, the display disappears. So you're just basically basing it off of how fast you remember it going and kind of where the character is in the stage of the movement.
Mm-hmm.
But at least up to like the level I'm at, they've added a hold option where you have to pull the stick halfway down, hold it till it fills up, and then pull it down the rest of the way.
When did you run into that? I guess I haven't done, like, I guess they're later in the coral region.
Yeah, so I am slightly further than you.
Okay.
I finished that fashion quest and then wandered out, and I unlocked the two towers and got. I got one other side quest, I want to say. Because technically we both can have the one for Johnny and the one for the fashion show.
Mm-hmm.
I have one extra one that involved the gym.
Okay.
But, yeah, it's right in that same area. Did you, by any chance, like did you look at the map of like, that coral area?
Yeah, I saw the gold saucer.
Well, no, not just that. It's fucking huge.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't realize how big it was because your story marker is so close to, like, where you start when you first leave the beach. I'm like, oh, so this area is actually kind of tiny. That makes sense, like, because it's just going to move you on. And then, like, I scrolled the camera down because I saw how many intel things I still had. And I'm like, there's nothing else here. And I'm like, oh,
yeah,
this place is fucking ginormous.
When I first had a chance, as soon as I reached Costa del Sol, I opened the map and I looked around it, and I was like, there it is, the gold saucer.
Yeah, but that's going to be in the next area, I'm assuming.
Yeah,
well, kind of the way you can
maybe. Well, I don't know.
So based on where things are on the map, I think it's kind of like when you're in Junhan, how you can like zoom out and see all the stuff over in the Calm area too.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's all on the map because it's all the same continent, but it's not part of that region of the map. Because technically, the Gold Saucer from the original game would be in the next region over. You left Costa del Sol, went through the caves, came out in North Corral Town where Barrett was from, and then got to the Gold Saucer.
Yeah, I'm pulling up a map because this is a good map.
But yeah, just a couple other things I guess worth saying. All the we were saying before, like, all the side quests are nice, but I like how they're stringing along some of the main quest stuff that you'd remember from the original. Like, getting a chocobo, going through the swamp.
Yeah.
They make the... I don't like that it's called, like, the Midgar Sumner or something like that.
Midgar Sormer.
Yeah. I like Midgar Serpent better.
I mean, but Midgar Sormer is Loki's snake. It's the snake
from... Is that what it's actually called?
Yeah.
I don't follow fucking Norse mythology.
You played God of War
5 years ago. You want me to remember something from 5 years ago?
The giant snake.
I remember the snake. I just always called him the Midgard Serpent.
In God of War?
Yeah, that's what I've always called it. I never actually paid attention to what they were calling it.
Oh my goodness.
And that's not Loki's snake.
Actually,
either.
No, that's Jormungandr. Why did I think it was Midgard Sormer was the name of the Loki snake? Old Norse calls it that. Apparently. According to God of War Wiki, the Old Norse is Midgar Sormor.
Okay. I mean, like, it sounds very much like a Norse thing. But I like that they did the whole, well, you have to fight this one. And then it ends with it skewered by Sephiroth the same way it does in the original game. And then, like, they've expanded on things. Like, Calm is a much cooler city than it was before. There's more stuff in that area between Calm and the Chocobo Farm.
It's not just Calm, Flatlands, Chocobo Farm. I will say I am upset. I did not see the Turks on vacation.
Wait, what do you mean?
They're supposed to be on vacation when you first get to Costa del Sol.
Oh, I never saw them either. I saw in Junhan, I found Elena like sulking over a drink because she failed. And I found Rude in the bar of bald people.
And when you run into Rude and Elena in the Mithril Mine, they say that Reno is on vacation.
Oh, right. Okay.
Reno is supposed to be at Costa del Sol when you get there. If I remember correctly, he's supposed to be there when you get there the first time. And he says, I'm on vacation. I'm not looking for you right now.
No, that's Kojo in the original game.
I could have swore it was the Turks.
Not in the original 7, right, True? Do you remember?
Hojo is definitely there the first time.
Yeah, he's on the beach. There's like a kind of like in this one. There's a scene with him, but it's not a fight or anything. There's no antagonism there. He's literally like, I'm on vacation. Fuck off.
Yeah.
Reno. I would make sense for Reno to be there in this case, but I just don't remember that.
Maybe it wasn't Costa del Sol. Maybe it's Wutai. They're on vacation.
Yes, they are on vacation in Wutai.
That I do remember.
Okay.
Wutai is one of the places where the first time I played 7, I didn't actually get there for any of the story stuff.
Yeah.
Because if you don't get Yuffie early and go to Wutai, you miss all of the story stuff that's there. And I miss Yuffie early in my first playthrough.
Mm-hmm. Also, just... to correct myself, or to be more clear, Jormungandr is the name of the snake, but it's also known as the World Serpent, which is Midgar Sormer. So it has two names.
Yeah. I was going to say something else about things. I draw a blank. Oh, what do you think of Queen's Blood?
I like it. It's a very interesting game. I personally think the Costa del Sol version of Queen's Blood is a better game than actually playing against people.
The one where it's like, hey, here's like a puzzle, essentially?
Yeah. Yeah. But overall, I think Queen's Blood is a very fun card game. I was initially annoyed when I first played it. I was like, oh, fucking card game. Are you kidding me? They really had to do this. But, like, it works. It's simple enough that it works, and it does call for a little bit of strategy. And I'm interested to see how there are other ways to play. I am fully a buff player. I buff and buff and buff. Like, if I don't get Chocobo Mog, I'm kind of fucked.
And I don't even have Chocobo Mog in my deck.
Where did I get why not?
Because I don't want it. I have it. I own it. It's not in my deck.
What, have you made a deck, or have you just used the basic deck that you get in the game?
I've made two decks.
Why haven't you used Chocobo Mog?
I read the thing. I don't need it. I don't buff. I have Magic Pot buffs, and I have the little squirrel dude does a buff.
But
Chocomog didn't do anything useful enough beyond that for me.
Chocobo Mog buffs himself every time a card of yours gets buffed.
Yeah.
So he goes up every time a card, including Chocobo Mog, gets buffed. So if you buff Chocobo Mog with a +2, he's actually getting a +3.
But and so if I only have one Magic Pot. And that's a 3-spot one. So usually if I even get that card on the field, it's a very late one. I play differently than you. I don't play to buff. I play to block my opponent.
You definitely do have to block your opponent a lot of times, but like,
no, I mean like I go aggressive. When I played red, he only had 4 spots that he was able to drop cards in by the end.
Wow. How do you manage that?
I have a lot of one cards in my deck,
but they get a turn. They get a turn after you, and I've ran into so many situations where I'm like, I can't play a card because they're just going to copy over the space that I'm going to be taking.
I let them do it first, so
but they go after you.
Yeah. So my first drop is usually like the soldier guy that he'll drop one on either upgrade one in front of him and one on either side.
Yeah.
So I usually put him in the middle so that then the two N1s get bumped up to 2 and the one right in front of him is 1. Mm-hmm. And then I will usually go for the one right in front of him with something that will either put 2 behind him or potentially buff one of the ones behind, like one of the 2 corners. And then I kind of like play with just those as the opponent comes down. So that this way, once they have a spot that's open, like, next to me, I can just drop mine right there and take over that spot.
Mm-hmm.
Because if there's no spot for them, for their red one, your green one is safe.
Yeah, yeah.
So, to be fair, I oftentimes have to, like, retry some of these, like, 2 or 3 times to, like, get the right hand. Like, it's not like I don't walk into there and, like, nail it every time, but, like...
Oh, no, same, me too. Like, for Regina, so on the ship, Drew, between Junon and Costa del Sol, they actually do, like, a card tournament.
Okay.
And you can, if you can, the rules are, like, you can, if you lose, you can challenge you can either do a rematch with who you fought or challenge the other challenger, and if you win, you move forward. I did that, I went all the way through, and I believe... The only person who really gave me much trouble was I went against Aerith in round 2. I think she was really the only one who gave me trouble until I played the champion Regina, which I had to restart that fight like 5 times. But that was the championship. If you lose that, you lose. You don't get to rematch. So I would like if I knew I was going to lose, I would like if you pause, restart, and just restart. And I had to restart that one a good number of times. Red was 1 try.
Yeah, I got red in one... Actually, red may have been 2 tries, because I think my first time I got cocky, and you know how they give you that... They literally call it a mulligan at the beginning, where you can get rid of cards from your hand and, like, redraw. I got cocky, and I'm like, okay, I can get these, like higher-level cards played quick enough, and I just fucked myself. And
I constantly accidentally hit triangle when I'm trying to reshuffle. And triangle is how you start the match.
Yeah. So like I fucked up 1 time against red and restarted like pretty quickly. But I did get Regina in the first try.
My best match, I played the lady who gives Cloud the hand massage. Oh yeah, the lady of Wall Street who gives Cloud the hand massage. 38-0.
I had a similar, like, it wasn't that high, but I had a similar, like, fuck you round against the guy from Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's just, like, everything went in my favor, and, yeah.
Oh, and the best part of that whole sequence, they did have Red walking around on 2 feet dressed up as a Shinra.
Oh, and he did a moonwalk. It was so good.
He did a moonwalk, and then you see him walking back, and he's just as adorable.
I love how often people call Red a dog and act like he's a pet, and he's just having none of it.
But, like, he could just fix it by saying, I'm not a dog. But no, he growls at them and pretends to be a dog. He likes it. He likes it. You know he does.
Yeah, well, it's like at the that thing in Costa del Sol, with the soccer-ish game.
Yeah, he got excited for the meat.
He got excited for the meat, and then during the date, he comes over, he's like, I'm not a pet, but I'll help you.
Yeah, he likes it. He likes being called, like, a pet, or probably not a pet, but he likes being called a dog. He likes being treated that way.
Yeah, but yeah, overall, I'm having an absolute blast with it. I think the story is... It's the same enough to feel familiar, but they're changing up enough and adding to it in a good way. Like, I think all three of us agree to some level that while Remake was good, some of the stuff that they, like, expanded on just made the game drag a little too much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel like this one has expanded it in a way where I want to go do this stuff. Like, I want to explore these regions. I'm not just like, I don't care. I just want to move on. It's like, oh no, like I want to learn about Alexander is the current summon for this area. Like,
yeah.
I want to learn about Alexander. I want to unlock all of the points and see what's on the map. I want to, like, do all those little things, all the side quests, and see, like, what either silly, funny things happen or what stuff that won't impact the story but will elaborate on the world will happen.
Like the escort mission. When you had to escort the dog. Now, Drew, you hear escort mission, you think, fuck, an escort mission.
I was going to skip it.
He was going to skip it. He was going to skip it until, like, I talked to him about it. It's worth it, because the dog that you're escorting doesn't get in the way. It moves faster than you do. And, like, if you get into combat, it kind of steps back. Because
So for me, he kept getting involved in the combat, but he never got attacked by anything.
I don't remember him getting involved too much, but he did get hurt a little bit from AoEs more so than anything else. So one of the cool things they do in this is your entire party's following you, even though you only have three active players. And so, like, if you have Barret on the sidelines, he'll be shooting at the enemies.
Yeah, Barret and Aerith actually do, like, a little bit of damage as you're fighting.
Yeah. So it's like they're not just inactive participants. They're there. They're actually helping. And if an enemy gets close to, like, one, like Red or Tifa, I'm assuming they're going to, like, punch them a little bit. Not do a lot of damage, but... So, like, that's the same with the dog. Like, the dog was an inactive active participant in that sense. But you have to follow this dog to a point, and it's all the way across the map. Which, like, man... You feel like that might be far, but these maps look big. They're not. They don't. You move fast. Yeah. And the whole time, Barret is talking about, because you're given money from a parent to give to their child. And Barret's talking about, like,
they're
Marlene.
They're adult child, to be clear.
Yeah, they're adult child, to be clear. Barret the whole time is talking about Marlene and how he wants her to, like, grow up and be her own person, and how he's gonna let her be free. And then he starts crying that he's gonna be a failure of a dad because he can't do that, and he wants her to stay his little girl forever, and he wants to protect her. I was just like, this is the best side quest dialogue ever.
There's a good one with Tifa too, with the gym stuff. Mm-hmm. It's not as good as that, but it's good.
Yeah.
I will say one mechanic I wish they had, and I understand why they don't, like, it takes away from the original, but also would make the game a little too easy, is I wish there was a way in battle to swap characters, even if it required you to, like, expend, like, a full ATB gauge, because, like, Final Fantasy X, you could do that. Like, you could swap characters from, like, in and out of your party in the battle, and, Persona lets you do that a lot of times, too. Like, Persona 5 and... At a certain point in 3, I feel like they're going to also let you do that, but I don't have enough characters in 3 to do it yet.
Yeah, This has been like similar to a complaint that I have about RPGs in general, especially a lot of modern RPGs. And this is why I really liked Remake, is because, yes, in Final Fantasy VII Remake, you have a total of 4 playable characters, but you only have, at any one point in time, 3 with you, 3 or less with you. Whereas in this one, you have a total now, between us, of 6, but you have to pick your team, and the other 3 are just there. Well, why not just balance the game to where all 6 are fighting at one time?
So like that, I feel like would be just a little too chaotic for me.
Because like I had the same problem with Baldur's Gate. Like you have, what is there, like 8-9 playable characters, including your Tav. Like, why not just let me use all of them? I understand balancing sake is a little rough, but like, you give me so many characters, and like, some of the, for instance, in Baldur's Gate is a little bit more limited, a lot more limited than Final Fantasy is, because Final Fantasy you can make up your own party makeup and who's the healer and whatnot. There's no specific roles, but in games like Baldur's Gate or Tales of Arise, there are specific roles for characters that like. All right, you're a healer, and that's all, like, I need a healer, so you're going to be in my team, and I can't really swap you out. And I need this character, I need, like, a DPS, so I need a tank, like, I need to fill my party makeup, so it kind of always tends to be, like, these 2 characters always in your party, and then you can still only swap out 1 or 2, whereas, like, you're giving me 9 different fucking characters, let me use them all, and, like, I hate it, that's why I liked Final Fantasy VII Remake, because, like, oh, you didn't have to choose your party. You could. So, you used what they gave you.
Yeah, I get that. I don't want a 9 or 6 person party. Like, that for me is too much. I do want the ability. Like, I would just like the ability in battle to like have some sort of way that you can swap out. So I feel like they give you on like the world map, you can have 3 different team combos like pre-made, and you can just like cycle through them. So like if you're coming up to enemies and you know that like say you need a range and your team is Cloud, Yuffie, and Tifa. You're like, okay, yeah. Yuffie and Tifa are gonna be useless in this battle. I need Barret and Aerith. You can just like hit L1, I think it is, or something like that, to tab over to them and you're good to go. Cause like in that Costa del Sol area, a bunch of those enemies are resistant to physical damage. Like, you hit them and they block everything, and you actually get, like, a partial stun off of them.
Mm-hmm.
It sucks fighting them with the physical people. And the first fight I got into happened to actually be Cloud, Tifa, and Yuffie, because I had just gotten Yuffie, and I'm like, I want to see if she plays the same as in Intergrade.
Intergrade, yeah.
Because, like, frankly, like, her and Tifa are the best ones to control in combat. Like,
yeah,
like the hand-to-hand combat just works really well in this.
Tifa's awesome. Tifa's fun to control, and like that again. It leads into a lot of the issues with party makeup, because like when it comes to a boss fight, you kind of want Tifa, because Tifa is the only way to increase the stagger percentage damage that you can get.
Yeah, it's like the perfect party makeup for me, at least, is usually Cloud, because you have to, and then Tifa and Barret.
Do you have to have Cloud on your team?
I thought you did. I haven't tried not to.
I haven't tried not to, but like, I don't think you have to have him.
I'd kind of be surprised if you don't have to have him.
In the original, you did, so I just assume you have to have him, because he is part of every single cutscene. but having Tifa and Barret is like, Barret is great for quick ATB fills. Swapping over to him and just unloading with his gun from a distance, like, you're generally safe-ish for the most part, because it usually takes an enemy a few seconds to target and come at you. And you can usually have the ATB gauge filled by then, cycle to somebody else, get, like, basically pull aggro from Barret, and then swap back over. I also, everyone in the party except for Cloud has the auto cast with heal, so as soon as health starts dropping low, they all start casting heal on each other. It's great. But like, I'll swap to Barret and just get his ATB gauge filled, because it's so fast just to have that heal kind of like ready in case I get hit by something nasty. But like, if I can run into a fight and be like, oh shit, this will be better with two like physical people, and just on the fly be like expending a full ATB gauge, I like, give me this character. And even if it means like they can't do something for the first like 5 seconds of a fight or something, like, you know, like give it some sort of handicap so people can't abuse it. I just think that would be nice, because they're there, you see them, like they're in your line of sight half the time.
Yeah, I mean, like I like the idea of expending an ATV, two ATV charges to swap out playable characters. And yeah, and now I'm even more annoyed because I literally just tried. You can't swap out Cloud, so you are limiting my party makeup. I can only have...
That's all JRPGs, though. Like, you can almost never take out the main player character, which is Cloud in this case.
I don't know. I just... This is why I do... One of the things I really liked about Final Fantasy 16 is, like, oh, there's no party makeup. It's just, you play the game.
But like, it's a bad game.
It's not a bad game, though. It was a good game. I really, and this is me giving emotions to characters that are to digital characters. I feel bad not using characters, so like I want to constantly swap out. And like you said, like it's unintuitive to swap out characters because it's you go into. I didn't know how to change characters for my entire first 4 hours of playing the game. I had to Google how to do it.
It took me a few minutes because Drew, you'll appreciate how fucking stupid this is. You open the main menu up. There's a section in the main menu, party. You go to that. Do you know what you can do in there? Absolutely fucking nothing.
You can look at the status of everybody in your party, like everybody, like all of the playable characters. That's it.
You have to go to combat settings to change your party.
Combat settings, and then hit square to then be able to switch out your party. Like, it's not just hit X and swap, it's hit square to then switch out your party makeup and to be able to set up the different presets of parties that you can have. But, like, to Cobb's point, what's the point of having these party presets if I can't swap to them on the fly?
Yeah, like, you can swap them, it's nice, it's quicker to swap to them when you're just running around the open world, but a lot of times I kind of forget they're there and go into the actual menu to do it anyway, because it's just more second nature.
Wait. And I because I was trying to see if you can swap out. You can actually swap out the party makeup in the open world.
Yeah, like if you go into the actual party setup, there are three programmable layouts you can do for your party. When you're in the open world, it's like one of the shoulder buttons swaps.
The game didn't tell me this.
Yeah, it does.
I don't remember this.
You skipped the fucking tooltip. It's also I'm pretty sure it's also on the screen anytime the menu's up, the HUD.
I've read all the tooltips. I don't remember it. See, because even during, like, Costa del Sol, when at one point you're running around as just Cloud, next point you're running around as Aerith and Tifa, and it tells you, you can hit L1 to switch who you're playing as. And I'm trying to hit L1 to switch who I'm playing as, and it's not switching. You had to walk up to the person and then hit L1 to switch who you were playing as.
I tried that too, and I'm just like, why doesn't this work? And I turned around and looked at Aerith or at Tifa. I'm like, oh, now there's a little icon. Oh, look, now it works.
Like, some of this stuff is a little unintuitive, but like, I was just, all right, I won't change my loadout that often. And that's fine. It was fine at first when I had only two other characters that weren't playing. Now there's three other characters that aren't in it. And so now I'm like, I want to swap out more. So I now need to figure out party loadouts. And that's cool, because then it's like, all right, well, who's going to have what abilities and spells and whatnot.
But when you recognize like the enemies that you're coming up to, also being able to just quickly cycle to the party makeup you need, it's a lot better than having the menu. That was part of the reason why I was like, I wish that Chadley had that ice or the lightning and water or whatever you said it was.
Lightning wind.
Because I actually went through in Costa del Sol and spent a bunch of money buying extra copies of all of like the normal materials so that I could have a consistent layout with everybody now, instead of for the longest time, because I wasn't swapping that often. I was just going in when I knew I was going to swap and just moving materials around. to like basically like make sure that my party had the most powerful materia of like a given type, but then like other characters would just not be equipped with anything at that point. Or I would give them like a bunch of just garbage materia because I wasn't sure if they were still getting SP for it outside of being in the party. So I'm like, I want to just make sure everyone, all this stuff's equipped so it'll level up. I do like the sphere grid in this one. I like that. I don't like that you can only do it like when you're at a vending machine or in a shop.
There are plenty around though. It's not very infrequent. But also, like I spent an entire stream yesterday, maybe even two streams, Monday and Tuesday, not having enough AP to do that.
Oh, that sucks.
So, like, because like I had done everything on Sunday. I did on everything on Junon. And I had upgraded everyone, and then it was like, all right, well, let's just play the story. So, like, I didn't need to find them because I had already upgraded everything as much as I could. But yeah. It's free to like re-roll and re-upgrade. I'm curious as to what the limits of that are going to be. Like, how is there an eventuality where like you don't get any more of these points? Because that was where the strategy came in Final Fantasy Remake, was using the arts books to get your AP to upgrade your weapons to be able to put together your sphere grid with the weapons.
And there are those books in this one too.
Yeah, there are those books. Also, just real quick, and man, we're going actually super long. I wasn't expecting that.
I was actually going to say like we should actually probably wrap it up.
I'm looking at the page right now, the Fextra Life page, and Lightning and Wood Materia can be found at Lightning and Wood Materia. Created at Chadley's Research Center for 30 Junon region points, available starting in chapter 4.
Can you only buy that stuff in the Junon region?
No, you have to go. If you're not in the Junon region anymore, you have to go into his menu and go to the Junon region.
Oh, maybe that's why I didn't have it then.
Yeah.
I did not buy anything from him in Junon at all.
Yeah, so that's what you have to go back. So you have to go into the like the Materia expansion thing or whatever, and it'll tell you like the Corel region and what you can buy there, because that's where you are now. Go back. You can go back to the different regions. Just a little tip. You want the AP booster on these, because
they take a ton to level up.
Yeah, they take so much to level up.
Well, I have the fire ice one.
Yeah.
Like I use that one a lot because it's great.
Yeah. I'm honestly, I don't use spells. I use those abilities from the sphere grid. Use those more than anything else because they hit multiple enemies.
So it depends on what I'm fighting. If I'm fighting just like trash enemies, I use those abilities because they don't take MP. But if I'm fighting anything larger, the actual spells just do more damage and also raise the stagger bar more usually. So I kind of like swap between them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm generally only using an elemental attack if it's going to pressure them. If it's not pressuring them, I'm not really using an elemental attack. I'm using abilities.
Exactly. But so I have. Have you not been unlocking all of the elemental abilities?
No, I have been. I've unlocked all the elemental abilities, and I only specifically use those against pretty much every enemy. I don't cast spells in this game. I don't know why. But it's even to the point where if you upgrade enemy skill, this is why you need to do the VR missions, because that's how you get different enemy skills, and you get Soothing Wind, which is an amazing AoE heal over time spell, which unfortunately locks your character into a position, but it does wonderful healing in an area of effect.
So I think that comes down to us both, like we play two different ways. Because I don't even have the enemy skill materia, and I'm not interested in the battle simulator beyond the summons, but I use spells a bunch, again, depending on like, the enemy, like...
I'm telling you, enemy skills, like, I guess you didn't, because you have to buy it from Chadley, but the enemy skill materia itself is great, because as you level it up, once you get leveled up through AP... It gives you, like, your initial thing is you get enemy skill abilities. And the first one is Sonic Boom, which is a wind attack. Then, as you level it up, it gives you, like, plus 5% or X% health, plus X% strength, plus X% this, plus X% that. Like, it increases your stats. It is an amazing, amazing materia to have. And the abilities you get, like, if to get to do the Midgar Stormer's ability, like, you, it's called Impulse or something, where, like, it bursts. And then you go and attack, and you continue to burst lightning as you're attacking as well. Or healing the soothing wind or the soothing air or something like that. It's, like, a large range. And you sit there and it just heals them. Almost full. It's like 30 something points every like half a second or something like that. And it lasts quite a bit. So again, unfortunately, you're out of use of that character until they get hit or until the spell ends. But I have come back from near death to almost full health just by using that ability.
And you know, I think that's the thing where like I said, everybody in my party except for Cloud has auto cast on heal. I very rarely get below like half health. The only time I've died, like had characters actually die was, on the ship, Red kept getting killed by things exploding.
Mm-hmm.
Like there were those one enemies, like if you didn't take them out quick enough, they explode.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, only Red was getting hit by them.
Weird. Maybe, because I did a lot of the game in hard mode. In hard mode, you have limited MP use and no item use, so I'm still in that mindset of gotta conserve MP.
Yeah, and, like, I don't play hard mode, so...
Which is why, I'm not playing hard mode right now, because I don't think it was unlocked, but if it is, I do plan on doing that later this year, but it's just... So maybe that's why I play this way, and try to be a little bit more, like... sparing with my MP.
Yeah, like I make a lot of items with the item maker thing that I'm drawing a blank on the name of. Especially those potions that heal everybody.
The mist potions are great.
And potions are very quick to use. Like all the spells have that like channeling time where like you're just more likely to get hit with them if you're not like quick to cast it while you're not controlling a character basically.
Yeah.
But the items just that they get used so quickly that you're almost always safe with those. We have different play styles is the thing. I probably would not get as much out of the enemy skill, and I'm not interested in fighting enemies in the battle simulator when I can go fight them for experience and level up and stuff instead.
But I'm pretty sure you still get experience for fighting them in the battle simulator.
I didn't think you did.
I think you do. Because it even says, like, if you lose, like, all your experience gained still is experience gained.
Okay.
But like, I've gotten level ups in the battle simulator.
Okay, yeah, I didn't think you got level ups in there. So, I mean, that's interesting.
You also get rewards for completing each of them.
No, I know that. I don't want to do the battle simulator, except for the summons. Like, the summons are the only worthwhile thing for me. Like, those are fun fights for the most part. Unless, like they're frustrating. But, like, so far, they've actually not been too bad. Mm. And I don't want to fight the same enemies that I had to fight already just for, like, a different reward. But the Mind Flayer. I had fun fighting the Mind Flayer.
The Mind Flayer was great.
Like, that was... I was worried about that fight. I definitely had more trouble with the Quasicodal.
That's a battle.
Yeah, that one. Than the Mind Flayer.
Mm-hmm.
But we've gone way too long. It's too late. We should wrap up because this is going to take me way too long to actually get posted tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Drew, when do you think you're going to pick this up anytime soon, or just going like, to
honestly
wait a while?
Busy my next month is. This month is. I don't know that I'm picking it up anytime this month because I don't know how much I'm going to get to play.
Well, just cancel all of your other plans and play this.
Nah.
Well, that's boring.
What was it that we were talking about with your... Oh, see, like, remember WrestleMania, how it's $50 for 4 hours? I'm at 24 hours, and I'm still only, like, 40% of the way through. So...
Yeah, but for Drew, WrestleMania is... Isn't it, like, 3 days and, like, 100 hours of wrestling this year? Because it's in Philly, and you're going to so many things?
I mean, yeah, I'm going to stuff Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And then that's... And then watching WrestleMania... Saturday and Sunday nights.
Oh, it's two. It's actually like WrestleMania is actually two nights.
Yeah, it's been that since the pandemic.
I didn't know that. That's fucking wild. That's so much.
Well, honestly, 2 4-hour nights is better than 1 8-hour day.
Oh, I didn't know they were doing 8 hours either.
Friggin' like 2017 or 2018, the pre-show started at 5 p.m. The show didn't end till like 12:30.
Wow. That's
it was a fucking nightmare.
Like, when I've never actually watched a paper like a WrestleMania, because when I did watch wrestling when I was like 12, like, my parents were not going to spend that money for the pay-per-view. So like, I have no idea, but that's crazy. Before we do wrap up, anything else either one of you would like to mention?
Nope.
No.
All right. Well, in that case, in 2 weeks, we are going to be talking about From Dusk Till Dawn for our next book club. And other than that, you can find more of our content over at www.one-quest.com. You can also help us out by supporting us at patreon.com/onequest. If you can't support us there with your dollars, though, you can go to your favorite podcast platform, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, rate us, review us, subscribe to us. All of it helps. You can also find us on social media. We're facebook.com/onequestonline or at @one_quest on Instagram and Twitter. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/onequestvideo, and you can always send us an email to social@one-quest.com. And Rich, what is your streams?
Twitch.tv/B_walnuts. We're on video game streaming Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday. It's Final Fantasy VII. Next Tuesday will be some Lethal Company. Definitely come hang out for Lethal Company. I believe that's what I've been promoting is Lethal Company next week. I think that's what it is. Yeah, so just come hang out.
Nice. Cool. And with that, we will be back next week with something else to talk about. Thanks for listening. Bye.
See yous.
Bye.